On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, Mon. Nearing a minute and a half past the hour, this is the post-vacation, post-relaxation, post-Caribbean, first Monday back version of the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm back in the studio, and I wouldn't be tanned, but I am rested and ready. I'm almost done molting. My face is almost done falling off. One day in the sun. I swear if I ever do this again, I'm taking a beekeeper suit. I really am. And one of the white ones. Highly reflective and everything. So, no, I'm back. It's cold. I've been trying to figure out a way to go live down there. But I doubt there's a whole lot of... whole lot of market for hillbilly talk show hosts in Grand Turk. We went to Grand Turk, we went to Puerto Rico, we went to the St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and we ended up by stopping at a little place that the cruise line has renamed Half Moon Cay in the Bahamas, but which is actually, in reality, Little San Salvador. As compared to its big sister, Big San Salvador. That's where we went. I got burned on Grand Turk. Got some great photographs. They'll sort of leak out little by little and one by one as time goes by. God, it was nice. It was just nice. It was 15 degrees Fahrenheit on Friday morning when we left West Virginia. Fort Lauderdale was warm, sunny, and 75. And then we got on the ship, and it got warmer and warmer and warmer. I probably should have written all of this down so I could just read you the account, but that feels like cheating. I wanted this rather to be sort of at least marginally impromptu. Because it gives me an opportunity to go back and see it and feel it and hear it all in my mind again, which is a blessing. I should tell you that I am sitting here at 4 minutes past the hour, 4 minutes past six here on the East Coast in the Eastern Time Zone, with a lovely Cuban cigar in hand. It's a Monte Cristo number 4. And it's delightful. And of all the things that you run across, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit, but of all the things that you run across, if you are a person of conscience, you find yourself going, are these folks okay? Is it, you know, how's their life? And in asking that, well, you know what? That's one of the nicest things about this Cuban cigar I'm holding in my hands. Because one thing I know about the Cuban cigar is that I know that this Cuban cigar was rolled by a person who has universal single-payer health care, who is probably more literate than the average American, and who, if female, is more likely to survive childbirth than an American woman, who probably has less mercury in her system than an American woman does. who has enough to eat, who has shelter, male or female. I don't feel at all bad about smoking this Cuban cigar. My one little first ever, took 48 years to get there, but my first ever little finger in the eye at the stupid, dirt, dumb, utterly ignorant embargo that the United States imposes upon Cuba. I found them on Grand Turk. It was a bit of an adventure finding my Cuban cigars on Grand Turk. The girls wanted to lay out in the sun, and they did that. Ferg and I took off out of the parking lot, copped a ride into Cockburn Town, had ourselves some fried plantains for lunch, a little bit of conch salad, cold glass of the local brew, and then went wandering. We went, as John Fox would say, walkabout on Grand Turk. All with an eye toward me finding my Cuban cigars, because it was the only place we were going to be that wasn't an American possession, not counting Half Moon Cay in the Bahamas, but, you know, that's really, there wasn't much, no. And we found them. After several stops and several conversations with the local people, who seemed to be quite normally happy, as opposed to, like, tourist happy, we would see some tourist happy along the way. We wound up out at the airport, the international airport on Grand Turk, where indeed I did find my Cuban cigars, real Cuban cigars, not the knockoffs that they sell you down the alleyways and stuff. No, these were real. And real good. So I've hung on to them. I wanted to make sure that I had one to light up for the first show back. Darn, it's nice. And, you know, even the taste of it is so much different than that of a cigarette or pipe tobacco in the U.S. because, of course, American corporations dump all kinds of filth into their tobacco. Now, please, no emails about how I need to quit smoking. I understand. But a cigar is not nearly as detrimental as is a cigarette, and a fella could be happy with one of these things between his fingers. Take that, embargo! But, no, there was a lot of stuff going on. Let me just say this at the beginning of things. It was not without incident. It was not absolutely perfect. I had never been to sea before. And even though the Caribbean is fairly calm, we did have a following what felt like a gale. At one point, they even closed off the promenade deck because the winds were too fierce to... It was a gale. And it was aft of us and blowing us about a bit. This might give you an idea.
Oh, there you are! Did you woo something pretty? Oh, that's a good twitch! I wish I could turn green like that. Oh, you need something on your tummy, pretty cat. A nice, fat, juicy piece of salt pork.
Salt pork? Ah, now I got you.
It was a terrible storm. The boat rocked and rocked, up one wave and down another, rocking the boat, rocking... Oh, the
putty
cat's turning dween again.
Yeah, the Bob Kincaid's turning dween again. The Bob Kincaid did turn dween for a couple of nights, but never, you know, never like commode hugging green or anything. Just that kind of ooh. But then there was medication available, but I didn't want the medication. I wanted to get over it naturally. I wanted to get over it for real. I wanted to get my sea legs under me. Because there was, granted it was the Caribbean and not the South Pacific, and there were no hostile aircraft overhead, but it was the first time I had ever been to sea, and I looked off at the horizon and thought for a little bit about that 19-year-old boy in 1944 looking off at a horizon of his own, who was, he was, of course, my father. And he never went to sea again after he got back from the Second World War, but the sea stayed in his it stayed in his soul. And while not a particularly not one prone to reading a lot of poetry, one poem did stick in his mind by John Masefield, written 1902, called Sea Fever. I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and the wheels kick and the wind song and the white sails shaking, and a gray mist on the sea's face and a gray dawn breaking. I must go down to the seas again, to the vagrant gypsy life, to the gull's way and the whale's way, where the wind's like a whetted knife. And all I ask is a merry yarn from a laughing fellow rover, and quiet sleep and a sweet dream when the long trick's over. And so I had that going. No, Marty, this will not teach me to keep a journal next time. I had an opportunity to keep a journal while I was there, but I deliberately didn't. Like I said, I wanted to have it to mind. I wanted to have it to memory. There are some things that happen. It's like the difference between literate and pre-literate societies. I wanted to use memory, and not print. Did I bring back any rum? I would have, but I ran out of room. No room for rum. And besides, it was too expensive, the stuff I wanted. I wanted some 18-year-old Barbancourt, but couldn't justify that. No, just couldn't. But I did have some. And it tastes better in the Caribbean. Trust me. A lot of wonderful little things happened. We were pulling into port in Grand Turk on Monday morning, and it was clear and it was beautiful, and I couldn't believe that I had been in 15 degrees Fahrenheit barely 48 hours before. And Agnes and I went out on the veranda. Really, we had a veranda. And just looked at water, a color of blue that I didn't know could exist in anything save, certain hallucinations. An amazing blue. And then something else amazing happened. There, off to starboard, you know, we old salts, we say things like port and starboard instead of left and right, we old salts. But smack dab right down in the middle of the water in front of us was literally the end of a rainbow. No kidding. I mean, you could see it just right there. Oh, I'm sure somebody will send me a science-y kind of email explaining, well, Bob, you dumbass, you know, that happens all the time. Well, it doesn't happen all the time for us. Here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia, the rainbow always ends over a mountain, behind a ridge, tucked into a holler, but never right smack dab where you are. And I thought Agnes was going to weep for the joy of it all. It was beautiful. That's when the dolphin showed up. We talked about dolphins some. That's when the dolphin showed up. With the rainbow's end right in front of our faces, the dolphin showed up and just sort of leaped out of the water as if, you know, hey, Agnes! I'm telling you, it's like living with Samantha Stevens. It really is. It's It was a magnificent trip. We followed on the next day, going to Puerto Rico, and that was my last night of being green. And to tell you the truth, rather than the, I figured out something. It's kind of empirical, but I figured out that a person in a state of sobriety is more subject to seasickness than a person with a cocktail in him. Because that evening, Agnes said, Bob, come on, you're on vacation. Get a cocktail. So I did. And it went away. And it all made sense in my head because people who are intoxicated stagger. Whereas people who are sober don't. So necessarily, when people who are sober are staggering, they obviously need probably to have a little something to induce them. And then it winds up kind of like being Ritalin for people who are hyperactive. Make sense? Nah, it didn't need, but it was a convenient excuse. Oh, the stories. And what went on aboard ship was amazing. The group itself was a delight. There was about 100 folks from all over the place, from the far northwest, from the Seattle area, to Florida, to up east, and down south. Arizonans were there. Our own Fancy from the chat room was there. We had a lovely week of hanging out and talking together. There were folks there from Colorado, folks from New Mexico, and people who had experiences something vaguely similar to the last closing scenes of Casablanca, just trying to get to Fort Lauderdale to get on the ship with all the vile weather that was running through the Midwest. Canceled air flights and redirected and stuff like that, but they got there. There were folks from Wisconsin. A beautiful, beautiful collection of folks. And the speakers and the panel discussions were amazing. The very first one that I attended was with Bobby Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And lo and behold, unexpectedly, there was a screening of his new documentary film that did very, very, very well out at Sundance. We discussed it a little bit on the program, called The Last Mountain, about the efforts that, of course, you know more than just about anybody else outside of southern West Virginia, about the effort to save Coal River Mountain and put a wind farm on it. That was screened. And I just happened to have a great big bag of I Love Mountains buttons and got to tell a lot of people about what's going on here and encourage people to realize that they're part, whether they know it or not, that they are part of the destruction of Appalachia as long as they sit there and turn the lights on and turn the lights off and don't realize that they are connected to this apocalypse. So we learned about using the I Love Mountains widget to go to ilovemountains.org and put your zip code in and find out what your connection is. And then once you found out what your connection is, to get busy and start telling your local utility that you don't want any part of mountaintop removal. And I guess being so close to the issue, I'm always surprised when I meet people and they hear about it and they go, "What?" There was a whole bunch of, "What? No, really, this is happening." And so that was so energizing. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention what was for me a gigantic treat. He said, pausing to relight the Cuban. A gigantic treat, and that was to finally get to meet and chat with and talk to and hang out with a little bit Mike Malloy. Mike is every bit as real as what you hear every night on his program. There's not a lot of difference between the Mike you hear night by night by night and the Mike who just walks around and hangs out and talks about stuff. He was just awesome on the panels. Just awesome. And said many of the same things on the panels that you hear on his show night after night. Surprisingly, there were a lot of people that who didn't know or didn't listen to or didn't realize they could get Mike Malloy even online. I was surprised to find out that there were a number of Horn listeners on the cruise that just came up and said, "Oh, hey, Bob, I listen." That was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. My eldest, Margie, who was on the ship with us, the Eurodam, Margie passed her 17th birthday in port in Puerto Rico. And we had a nice birthday for her. Also interesting, and it was like something out of, I don't know, an old movie. We were getting ready to depart Puerto Rico. I was standing on our veranda again. Did a lot of standing on the veranda. And I could hear a loudspeaker a ways away, and it was at the government house. You could see it from the port. And my Spanish is lousy, but it was a demonstration. A very, very well-attended one at that. Having to do, I found out later, with objections to fees being raised for college students there. My Spanish, as I said, is lousy, but I heard I picked out a little word here and there. I heard Egypt, and I heard liberty. Yeah, you get the idea. And you know what? If Puerto Rico wants to be its own nation, I'm behind it. I'm one of those freedom kind of people. I don't think that we've got a lock on it. If Puerto Rico would like to be free of the U.S., I would like for Puerto Rico to be free of the U.S. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, it makes about as much sense as Hawaii being part of the U.S. I love Hawaii, but, you know, come on. Those are old, outdated manifestations of our imperialist urges, aren't they? Yeah, I thought so too. So much to talk about. So many stories to tell. I got up one morning, and it was the night, I think it was the night before Grand Turk, because we had that following gale, and it was the wind was blowing so hard, it was blowing our veranda door open, you know, out onto our balcony. And the wind was howling through in a way that it only sounds like that at sea. And so I would get up out of the bed, you know, and go and shut the door and look out, and it would still be dark. And yet at the same time, the alarm that I had set for 7 o'clock in the morning so we could be up and off the ship lickety-split had already gone off, and yet it was stone dark at night. And I began to, and then I realized in my sleepiness, wait, we're traveling down one leg of the Bermuda Triangle. Oh my God, we may never get home! But we got there, and it turned out that it was just a matter of the cell phone not able to reset its clock, and everything was okay. But yeah, it showed that we got into Grand Turk at 12:28 when it was actually 7 o'clock in the morning. Kept expecting maybe the veranda door to blow open and Rod Serling to walk through. It was just a little bit on the unsettling. But I was totally unsettled by then. I was completely out of my element. And the ship was beautiful. The ship was beautiful. It wasn't all tacky and Kathy Lee Gifford running around dancing, and there was no Mickey Mouse rat wandering around, or Snow White, or Cinderella, or any of that stuff, and there was no high pressure, no, you know, hey, don't you need to go buy another drink, buddy? Mm-mm. No. It was all very laid back. All very relaxed. And I am very relaxed. First vacation in 12 years. and it could not have been more pleasant. Still trying to figure out if maybe they need somebody to, oh, I don't know, to teach English or Latin or something on Grand Turk, because Grand Turk was the least touristy of them all. It was a very small island, very sparsely populated, but very, very pleasant. Very pleasant. Pleasant people. The national anthem of the Caribbean is anything by Bob Marley, by the way. Back on the ship, I had a small collection of Jimmy Buffett music. And one came to mind as we headed home, and it's still stuck in my head. Doesn't want to go away. So we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn, and I am a no longer horribly sunburned Bob Kincaid.
She said, I can't go back to America. So goddamn cold, it's gonna snow until June. They're freezing up in Buffalo, stuck in their cars, and I'm lying here, need the sun and the stars. Customs man tells her that she's gotta leave. She's got a plan hidden up for shrewd sleeve. Walt's gonna find her a captain, a man of strong mind, and in the direction he blows will be fine. Please don't say mañana if you don't mean it. I have heard those words for so very long. Try to describe the ocean if you've never seen it. Don't ever forget that you just may wind up being wrong.
Forget that you
I'm still way too mellow. I am mellowed out more than any Xanax or Valium could ever accomplish. I mean, I know there was a lot of stuff that went on while I was gone. You know, I can't turn my back on the world for a minute without, you know, some tin horn dictator getting overturned or, well, you know. And more, you know, this is Moran Monday too, but I just sort of overrode Moran Monday with some, for some trip updating and stuff like that. Probably, just to let you know, one of the most fascinating discussions that was had aboard ship was a panel discussion called Is Barack Obama a Progressive? And I just sort of sat there at the back of the room going, because I figure, you know, hell, I got 3 hours a night to say whatever I want to say. You know, no, I didn't want to impose. But it was a vigorous discussion. The oh hell no, he's not contingent, being led primarily by Malloy and Representative Grayson, and Hal Sparks, who was a darn fine guy, leading the contingent for the oh yes he is side of the argument. And you know, I mean, and you know who Hal Sparks is, right? Funny man. His Ustream show is huge, and of course he starred in the HBO series, or was it Showtime? Can't remember. Queer as Folk. When we docked in the U.S. Virgin Islands, we docked next to a ship called the Allure of the Seas, which holds like 6,000 traveling passengers. It's a monster. It's like bigger than the USS Enterprise, and I mean the starship, not the aircraft carrier. NCC 1701D, as a matter of fact. But that ship had been entirely chartered by gay guys, and when it went around the ship that Hal Sparks was on, ours, there was an absolute near approaching stampede to get off the boat and go get autographs from Hal. So I was told it was it was quite charming. Our neighbors, one bulkhead over from our suite, we were leaving St. Thomas, and our neighbors were from the Midwest, and they were three older ladies, and they said to me through the bulkhead, "You see all those colored flags on that ship over there?" And I thought she meant like the semaphore lines and stuff like that, you know, the hurricane warning, you know, the this end up, use no hooks, that kind of stuff, that, you know, if they signal at sea. You know what those are? No, ma'am. Everybody on that ship is one of those homosexuals. Those are those homosexual flags. It's one of those moments you just sit back. Really? I didn't know they had their own flag. Hell, I didn't know they had their own country. Yeah, all those flags, those are those homosexuals. I said, well, I bet that is one heck of a fun cruise. And through the bulkhead, you could just hear the crestfallen on the face. Oh, well, I guess so. Sometimes you don't have to scream to confront bigotry, you know. I bet they're having a great time. Oh, I guess. Those are those homosexuals. I got to tell you, I thought of our dear friend Peter Godbold when that happened, because if he'd been on the veranda with us, what I would have paid. Those are those homosexuals. That's what those flags are about. There's lots of stories like that. Lots of stories. But let's see. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Well, hey, shipmate.
Hey, shipmate. Boy, did we have fun or what?
Oh, did we? We did.
I was just talking with a friend, and this is literally my first vacation ever that it was about me doing what I want to do. You know, I was a wife and a mother, and I went home to visit the family, and I traveled a great deal. But it was always accompanying someone else. And this one was mine. And how wonderful it was, and oh my God, we just we were so well taken care of. We had tenders. We had David Bittner and Mila, and they just kind of saw the.
Yeah, from the Cruise Authority in Atlanta, Georgia, David Bittner and Mila, who sort of made sure everything came off without a hitch. I will go ahead and say, and this is an unpaid advertisement, and I'm sure you'll echo me, Fancy. If you ever got a cruise, those are the guys. If you want to go, those are the people to go through, without a doubt.
Oh, we were so well taken care of. And it was just, you had a question, and they would answer it, or they'd say, I'll have an answer for you as soon as I find out.
Right. See, I was the problem child. I lost my luggage tags. And, don't sweat it. Don't sweat it, Bob. Everything's going to be just fine. And then, you know, we had an early flight coming off the ship, and, don't sweat it, Bob. It's going to be just fine. Here's the forms, blah, 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 blah. No problem. Problems were not allowed to happen aboard that ship.
We had another couple from Tucson, and who had booked through Holland America, so they weren't on our list. And very, I don't know, you remember, tiny little elderly couple, Mary and Jerry.
Uh-huh.
And so they, you know, at first they weren't in, you know, their name wasn't on the list, and they weren't invited for dinner seating, et cetera. And so the second night I see them at the table, and I said, well, I see they've elevated you to the grown-up table. But they were so cute, and our tenders took good care of them, took good care of us. One of the things we had going there is on the back of our name tags, there were numbers, and some of the numbers were in red, and some of the numbers were in black. And the numbers in red meant that you were having dinner the numbers were the number at the table.
And red or black meant whether you were dining by yourself or with some of the celebrity cruise guests.
Well, and so I was a single, so I was met different people every night at different tables. And we really did, some of the people I met, you know, who weren't, some of the nights were just wonderful with people who weren't the principals.
Oh, there were amazing people in the group who weren't, you know, panel discussers or anything. But you know, that's the kind of thing that you find whenever you're dealing with a bunch of liberals/progressives, because we, you know, one of the beautiful things is finding out this sort of like-minded neighborliness among folks from corners of the, you had no idea.
That was coming up, you know, as just the fact that you could, you didn't have to, and I don't
self-censor?
The word I want. Self-censor myself that much. But you were just free to express opinion without any, you know, and the sense of community within the first day of who we were and where we were was just amazing. Incredibly sweet folks. Some. We had one couple there that literally, I think, have made every cruise. They've done the Lib Boat and the Nation.
Wow.
And real sweet people. I had dinner with them one night, and they're signed up for the next one. That's what they do.
Yeah, the next one's going to be a little odd. It's going to be more than a year from now. It'll be like June of 2012, and instead of going into warm weather, it's going to go into freezing cold.
In June.
Yeah. June of 2012. It's going to, I guess, start in Boston or somewhere and go up into the frozen north of Newfoundland and Nova Scotia and then back down through the St. Lawrence Seaway, and, you know, everybody will be wearing parkas and stuff. That's going to be weird.
You were talking about all the different people from different places. Hal Sparks had a deal on his show. He had a series of questions, and if you answered his quiz, you won a free cruise. Now, you had to get yourself to Fort Lauderdale, but there was still a free cruise. And the winner of that was just this lovely, lovely young woman from
Germany.
Antonia. And what a darling she was. And she was smart and just fun. And we had a great time with her. And I had met her watch, you know, when he's on Ustream. And I met another couple there, Johnny and Caroline, and I sort of spent time with them. At, and the fun crew, Marie and the girls.
Oh, yes.
yeah. It was a once-in-a-lifetime event for me, and I totally loved it, and I got to meet the lovely Kincaid kids.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to them yet, have we?
I'll tell you what, we all had a good time, but Fergie had a good time.
Ferg had more fun than every single human being on that ship combined.
Ferg met a girl, and I saw her at formal night where we are all dressed up. God, we clean up nice.
We do. You can dress us up, and you can take us out.
they dressed us. So Ferg had met a girl in the teenage section, and aside from looking 22, you know, I had to reassure me she was underage, but gosh, she was beautiful. So he had himself a good time.
I know how good it was because of the amount of time that Agnes and I spent chasing him down and trying to find out where he was.
Well, he'll be telling that tale to his grandkids.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And he and I
went off on our wanders. You know, like I said, the women folk, as we say here in the hills, preferred to be sedentary under the sun. While we went off a wandering, and had a lovely time on St. Thomas, went and ate some local cuisine at a local place. You know, no chain food for us, no franchise food. Wandered around, got sunburned some more,
and lived to tell the tale.
My face has stopped peeling off. You will be pleased to know, Fancy.
Oh, you and your Nordic nose, my goodness. You just yeah.
And you know, you said the Kincaid kids had a lot of fun. Some of the most fun that Doodle had, and Margie to a certain extent, was in helping to babysit Molly.
Isn't she a lovely child?
Who is an absolute delight. I think Molly is 7 going on 47. Wise beyond her years.
Yeah, we were there with little Molly McCoy.
Right. Oh, what a joy she is.
And you know, her dad was 62 years old when she was born, and I'm thinking, my goodness, that's bravery. But he's a wonderful dad, just watching the way he handles her. Kathy is terrific.
Oh, yeah.
We met families, we met, it was pretty awesome. We had Mike Farrell and his wife, Shelley Fabry.
Weren't they just wonderful people?
And, yeah, what sweethearts. I got a copy of Mike's book signed to my daughter because her birthday's this month, so she's getting a signed edition of Mike's book.
Yeah, Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist.
And what a sweetheart he is. And it came out that he had produced a film a number of years ago called,
Dominic and Eugene.
Dominic and Eugene. And sort of out of the blue, David Bender says, well, you know, if you want to see that, we'll try to get a showing. And they did.
Had
popcorn and a showing and I was one of the ones that I couldn't go on the islands too much because I have big swelly ankles and I didn't want to challenge that. So I got to watch the film and worth a watch. Dig it up on your Netflix, Dominic and Eugene.
Oh, it's a great movie. It is.
And Tom Hulce.
It's not a lighthearted laugh riot though.
Yeah, Tom Hulce, the actor who did Amadeus.
And Animal House.
Yes. And I hadn't realized that was Tom Hulce until it came up. And I'm like, oh my God, he's a family favorite. And Liotta.
Ray Liotta, yep.
Ray Liotta. And to sit there and watch it, and sitting down the way is the producer, Mr. Mike Farrell. And you're feeling pretty spiffy about yourself under those circumstances. lot. I'll be calling back. I think I've got easily a year's worth of stories and tales and gratitude, lifelong gratitude for having the privilege of doing, of being there. But folks, let me tell you, just to be in a community where it's normal to be a liberal, where the people around you, and this doesn't mean that somebody say something and we all go, yeah, sure, I agree. We had differences of opinions.
Yes.
Yes. And we had some pretty lively debating going on just at the tables and around. But what a pleasure it was. So I'm going to go away now how quickly can I adjust to luxury? And here I am back in Arizona with nobody to make my bed.
And you know, we kind of got to, somewhere along the way, I got to talk about that a little bit. You know, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I don't, you know, we at this program, we have very, very strong commitments to social justice. And the minute I got aboard ship, I sort of began to look at, the staff, the service staff, whether it's your cabin stewards or your wait staff or the folks, all the people who make everything the wonderful experience that it is, on Holland America lines are almost uniformly from either Indonesia or the Philippines. And you know Agnes and me. We're going to...
Oh, yeah, and me.
Yeah, and Agnes especially is going to... And where are you from, and how many children do you have? Oh, they're just darling. You know.
Oh, yeah.
And she's, you know, I want to be friends on Facebook. And because, I mean, that's just the kind of humane, actually interested in people's lives kind of person that Agnes is. But I got to admit, Fancy, I began to look around going, wow, this is one big-ass boatload of pasty-faced white people being served by a boatload of brown people.
I kept asking, do you enjoy your job, and do you enjoy doing this? Just everybody was... apparently, they are very, very good labor relations there. I hung out with one of the musicians, and he was saying they have a club of their own that they can go to, and just a number of things. But something that impressed me, and it was one of the nights I was having dinner with we didn't have a principal at the table, and we had gotten on the topic of Sarah Palin, and the young man that was serving our table sort of leans over and he says, What do you think of Sarah Palin? And he's obviously working hard at English. English is not his first language, and he's phrasing very carefully. And I said, we don't like her. She's a bad person. You know, as you tend to talk to somebody like they're a child. And then he said, in Indonesia, no one likes her. He said, Indonesian is 70% Muslim. We're modern Muslims. And he said, what I was getting from it was she had used the word crusade. And one, I was delighted he spoke out. Also, apparently, there's no prohibition on the ship of speaking out. That here was a guy who was free to express himself, and with language difficulty, he was still quite eloquent. And that was a nice moment for me to share that moment with the people around me. I'm going to go and let other folks come in, but I'm going back to the chat room now. So if you have questions. No, Bob wore long pants the whole time. I never saw him in shorts. And so did I. But we're real cute anyway.
Oh, I've got great pictures. I have wonderful pictures.
And I want all those pictures up on the website one of these days.
Well, I hope to do that, and I hope we get the site stable, because I'm seeing some information coming in from John Fox now that some of those troubles we had a couple of weeks ago, were not a boating accident. The Horn website and the Horn servers didn't, and the White Rose servers didn't just go.
We've been attacked.
We were attacked.
Little bastards.
Rat. Sorry. Nozzle. Yeah. Well, Fancy, it was a joyful week, and a big part of it was getting to hang out with you. And
and the same too. I'm an ex-smoker, but in my heart and in my mind, I'm still a smoker. So I have to go out and just stand with smokers and get secondhand smoke.
And I was convenient.
And I was following Bob Hatfield. Yes, I'm going to go. I'm sitting behind you. And so I enjoyed our smoking together.
Yeah, fire one up and have Fancy there just catching the contact eye.
Oh, you betcha.
Well, you have yourself a wonderful evening. And it's hard to believe we're back, huh?
Yeah,
and Agnes sends love.
I love your family. Had a great time with them, and you know what though? How can anything be too good? I was really getting tired. So yeah, it was just about the right length for me.
Yeah, I could have taken a couple more. I could have, truth be told. If there's any downside to it all, is that there isn't enough time in the ports of call. I could have taken 2 days on St. Thomas. Puerto Rico, yeah, okay, had enough. But St. Thomas would have been nice to have a couple of days on, or to cruise on into the Bahamas and have another day on one of those islands. That would have been cool, too.
There's a joke, and I can't remember the joke. I can only remember the punchline, but with the flags out on the other ship.
Mm-hmm.
And oh yeah, it had something to do with ferry boats, and the punchline was, "Do we have our own navy now?"
Right.
Okay.
Do you know what all those flags mean? That boat is full of those homosexuals.
Those. Oh, I found out who the bad folks are now. You know, I mean, I live down here in and I'm just 60 miles from Mexico, where I live in Arizona, so. Check your papers, please. Are Hispanics, but in a rather long wait in the airport at Fort Lauderdale. Other people coming off of other boats were talking about those pushy Japanese.
Ugly Americans have been replaced.
Oh man, I was hearing about pushy Japanese.
I love it when white folks describe somebody else as pushy.
Oh, they just get in line in front of you, and they're just And I hadn't realized that was the unfortunate group du jour, but apparently it is. And now I really am going to go. Love and kisses, everybody.
All right, see you, Fancy.
In the chat room.
Back to the chat room with you. Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, welcome home. It's Kevin from South Korea.
Well, hey, Kevin, how you doing? Thanks. You there? Kevin? Kevin?
Hello?
There you are.
Can you hear me?
I got you.
Okay, great. If anyone deserves it, if any family deserves it, it's yours, man. Deserves a cruise, a week off, brother.
Oh, it was so nice, and I will never be able to fully express my gratitude to the person who made this all happen.
Well, you know, God bless, man. God bless. Well, you know, God bless. I know people, and you know how I mean it. Meaning, I'm so happy for you. I'm very happy for you and your family. I was close by. You know, I was in Jamaica for a while. I don't know if you saw my Facebook pictures. Visiting family.
I did, but it was only after I got back and realized, wait, but then we weren't really in waving distance, were we?
No, we weren't. But, yeah, you know, it's good to hear from you, and good to have you back, and the family back safe and sound. I'm back in Korea. I'm getting ready to move to China within 3 weeks.
China?
Yeah, well, I got a teaching job in Shanghai, an offer I couldn't refuse, English teaching job.
Okay, we'll leave off all jokes about Kevin having been Shanghai'd.
Yeah, please. But, yeah, I just wanted to comment you know, U.S. foreign policy, and how U.S. treats, like, leaders of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen Black Adder's Bear episode, the Puritan, the fanatical Puritan aunt and uncle?
Not sure, no.
The Black Adder Bear episode when he has the bear drinking party.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yes. Those two are the U.S. Because it seems like they don't like people who are actually nice to them.
Right.
They'll go with the Mubarak of the world, but Aristide, who's done nothing to nobody, they'll kidnap him in the middle of the office and put him in a strange country somewhere. Do you get it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. It's like they'll smack him in the face for actually being civil and nice to one another. You know, like they were doing to Adder and his friend. Oh, hi, nice to meet you, and smacking in the face, but no one likes it.
Right.
That's pretty much.
And it was weird because I was incommunicado. Internet time was 75 cents a minute, and it was at a speed approaching dial-up. So while there was TV on board, shame on me, I know, I wasn't doing my job. I didn't turn the TV on.
Good. Well, you shouldn't have to.
And I didn't go up, and I mean, I checked email just long enough to make sure that nothing had blown up or Well, there were some things I had to keep an eye on, but I turned it all off. I mean, I went dark, and then everything happened.
That is what you're supposed to do. You know, the days I spent in Jamaica, I didn't get on the net until I hit the capital city. You know, when I was at my uncle's farm, I didn't do no internet. No internet, no cell phone.
You know, yeah, it is possible to live without both. We largely convince ourselves in these our modern lives that we can't, but it is possible.
Oh yeah. You know, we had cable because at nighttime, you know, nighttime movie of the night kind of thing. You know, we'll watch a movie at night, but other than that, we just explored our surroundings and went to the beach and had good food, good drinks, and good cigars.
Yes, yes. Did you have some good cigars?
In Jamaica, yeah. Because, believe it or not, Jamaica has a cigar industry. It's been defunct for about...
Oh, I know. Years. Well, the original Macanudos and the original Temple Hall Estates brands both came from Jamaica.
And they're trying to restart it. They have small companies, very tiny companies. I managed to bring back some... a brand name called Jamaica's Pride, which were very good.
Wow.
And they're quite expensive.
Well, I picked up some cheapos. Well, not cheapos, but I picked up a little handful on the dock in San Juan from a guy who was rolling them right there on the little stand on the corner. And those were damn decent, but it's a far cry from the Cuban. It's the dirt. It's the Cuban soil.
Yeah.
Just like it's the French terroir is what makes all the difference in the wines.
Hello?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah. Well, I was saying Puerto Rico, if you get out of San Juan, you'll get better cigars.
And see, that's one of those things about those short stays on it. It's really difficult to do that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Puerto Rico, and this is a legacy of the colonialist mentality, is forced to be dependent on the United States, because Puerto Rico has some very good coffee, you know, very good cigars, but a lot of the farmers are paid off not to cultivate the land, hence creating a culture of dependency.
I'll tell you one thing I saw there as we cruised in into San Juan Harbor, and I got a picture of it just because it was so stunning to me. We were cruising right past the Bacardi distillery. And
oh, yeah.
I'm no Puerto Rican rum guy. Nah, not really. But the distillery's there, and standing, just shooting up the 8 stories above the height of the highest palm trees, there are a pair of industrial wind turbines that power that distillery.
Well, that's good. Well, that's good. And that, you know, goes back to the original thing. You know, most cane and rum distilleries had a windmill going back 500 years since they were making rum.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's the original technology. Unfortunately, Bacardi isn't even, it's a U.S. corporation that, centered in the Bahamas now, Bacardi.
Right.
You know,
My favorite rum to this day remains a Haitian brand called Barbancourt.
Oh, the Barbancourt, yeah.
Yeah,
I like that one.
And, yeah, that, ooh. Mm.
Yeah, that's good rum.
But the Appleton Estate stuff from Jamaica and, Myers's, is.
Myers could be from anywhere because they have Barbados, Jamaican, and, some other island.
Yeah. And then the big deal in the Virgin Islands was Cruzon because, of course, that comes from St. Croix.
Yeah. The thing is with Jamaican rum, okay, especially the dark brands, they try to replicate it to taste like scotch, and that's from the British influence on the island. Because during the war, there was such a shortage on scotch, or it was just stored someplace. They used rum instead, which was cheaper.
Ah.
Okay. So, you know, you'll find some of the older, like the finer barrels of Jamaican rum,
mm-hmm.
starting to have a smokier taste like scotch. They tried their best to replicate a scotch taste.
Ew. I like to taste the molasses. I like to taste the sugar cane in rum, because that's what makes it different. You will get a kick out of this. On board, on the way to the dining room on the ship, you had to pass through the shops area. And of course, there's the whole duty free, lots of liquor. You know,
oh, yeah.
I never got that. It just didn't grab me. You know, going 1,000 miles from home to buy a bottle of liquor, I can buy across the river.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised on the Virgin Islands, St. Thomas.
Yeah.
You could get a case of half a case of cognac for $200.
Whoa, I missed that part.
Remy Martin.
I'll be darned. Well, what I was about to say is that on the duty free on the ship, they had a, you know, just kind of sitting there, a bottle of Louis XIII.
Yeah.
Marked to the low Kmart price of, $1,845 for the bottle. And so I've got this wonderful photograph of Agnes standing next to it, pointing at it with this look on her face, the scream.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just sitting there, and I looked at somebody and said, they've got a lot of confidence in this ship not moving around a lot at sea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, put it this way. My palate is not that delicate to warrant a $2,000 bottle.
No, so, no. Me neither.
I'll be happy with the XO, Hennessy, which is $100, on special occasions. Even that's an extravagance for me. I'm happy
anything above Old Panther is a wild extravagance for me, but that doesn't mean you can't look at it and wish a little bit.
Because here in Korea, I basically...
But what blew my mind was that my Cuban cigars on Grand Turk were no more expensive than an American cigar in a shop here.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, the thing is, it's the forbidden fruit thing, and also you got to keep in mind, in Havana, a lot of the Cuban cigars are fake, just like Dominican Republic.
Yeah, these weren't. These were not. This wasn't some guy with a glass case back behind the liquor cabinet.
Okay, good.
I'm actually rather schooled in that, and I can generally spot them. And so, no, I wouldn't have if I thought there was even the remotest chance that these were phonies.
But you have to be careful of that. Is this your first time to the Caribbean?
Oh, yeah.
The Caribbean?
Yeah, I'd never been south of Key West.
Oh, okay. Well, those are things. Actually, they make some good cigars in Tampa, too.
Sure. It's the forbidden fruit thing, but it's also the soil of Huelta Abajo and the stuff that's in it there.
It has a peppery taste, which is good.
Oh, there's all kinds of. I mean, I'm gonna this one I lighted. I'm gonna smoke it. I'm gonna smoke it down to where it burns my fingers, and it's good all the way to the end. There's no.
Oh, yeah. So you managed to bring one or two in.
Yes.
Okay, good. Congrats, man. Congrats. Yeah, I have. You see, I get them out here in Korea.
Why do you think I bought the Puerto Ricans?
I took the
bands off the Havanas, put them in the bag with the little Puerto Rican flag, and no problem.
Oh, good. You see, in Korea, I get Cuban cigars, so.
Right. Yeah. I mean, no. And see, that's one of the things I was telling Ferg. You know, the thing is, I'd love to go to Cuba. I would just, you know, before Castro dies, if he hasn't already, I'd love to go there and see, you know, because it's a time capsule. But once Castro dies, and that regime falls, there'll be a McDonald's on every corner, and it'll be no different than being in Fort Lauderdale or Miami, and it'll be disgusting.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be a tourist trap. The beauty of moving to China, guess what I'll get very cheap?
Electronics, everything.
Besides that, cheap and cigar.
Oh! Yeah, there's probably a little deal.
Plenty of deals in Shanghai. They say Cuban cigars in Shanghai, there's like one in almost every block. And, you know, that's basically Cuba's currency, their cigars now.
Sure.
That's their most surefire way, besides tourism and ecotourism, is importing cigars. So the hard currency, and it's pretty big in China. You know, Cuba and China has a very tight relationship, you know. So that's why I'll be getting fairly cheap. In Korea, it's still a problem because they charge ridiculous amounts of money, $30 per stick, which is cheap in the United States, you know.
Yeah, indeed.
Because in the United States, you're not going to find anything for less than 60 if it's real.
Oh. Well, Kevin, by all means, keep us posted as you said, what, a couple of weeks before you go to Shanghai?
Yeah, and, you know, whatever happens, again, I just had to make my comment on Egypt, you know. It seems like the United States has a masochistic streak, and it seems like the nice authoritarians, they seem to overthrow, but the mean, vicious ones, they love.
Well, it's largely whoever, well, we have this ugly habit of supporting people who are willing to crack down on the side of American business. And that's the,
yeah.
But you know, this one worked out well, although it remains to be seen just how much freedom will flow out of the army will let have happen. For instance, they have, the army has forbidden all labor organizing in the interim, which means that basically there can be no labor-oriented candidate slates. And that's not a good sign.
Again, it's only been 3 days. I guess they just want the fires to die out.
Yeah, they want to get back to something approaching normal.
Yeah, you know, we'll see in 6 months. Give them the 6 months. You know, that's all I can say. And hopefully the United States will not put its ugly beacon, you know, into the thing. Let this happen organically. All right, my brother. You know, again, happy for you, and you'll hear from me soon.
All right, you take care, Kevin.
Okay.
All right, bye now. Kevin calling from South Korea, and who knows? It may soon be a phone call from Kevin in Shanghai. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
It was a lovely, lovely affair.
Tell me, what brand of Cuban cigars did you get? Like Upmoons, Monte Cristo?
I got a little handful of Monte Cristo number fours.
Well, that is a good cigar.
You know, I like the Corona shape. I don't have to have one of those gargantuan, you know, big old Churchills or anything. The Corona shape, you know, about a 42 ring gauge, about, you know, 5 inches long. Perfect, perfect.
I got a little story for you, if you don't mind listening to it.
Go ahead.
You were talking about the rainbow flags on the gay cruise.
Uh-huh.
Well, I won't go too far into this, but up on Fire Island, well, let me put it this way. I'll just use it as a story, okay?
Okay.
Observed were two women talking about people and their behavior on Fire Island. And one woman said to the other, "Do you see those two men dancing together? They're homosexual. And you see those two women together? Well, I think they're Lithuanians.
Yep. Lebanese.
No, Lithuanians. The thing about it is, from that point forward, over that compound, the very next day was flown a Lithuanian flag.
Oh, you know, I didn't have it in my heart to be mean to the ladies one bulkhead over. You know, they were older, a couple of them were in wheelchairs. You know, they were in a different corner of the world. And it's a boat full of those homosexuals. And I think they were shocked and titillated beyond their ability to comprehend.
Well, I'm sure they were. By the way, you know, Hal Sparks is from Kentucky.
Yes, he is.
Right. But anyway,
he was telling me about some of his Kentucky connections, and I said, "Well, you know, we're from West Virginia." He said, "Oh, then you know." Yes, yes, we know.
I'm sure he could tell you. Yeah, he's quite a good comedian.
And I guess he's on the Stephanie Miller Show every Wednesday, and just has a boatload of fun. And his Ustream show is like the third most popular on planet Earth.
Yeah, I listen to those things on the radio. I mean, on the internet from San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
About almost every other day. And
but he did a couple of sessions of stand up last night and I think the second night, and it was quite hilarious. He's, my God, he's an intelligent man.
Oh yeah, he is, absolutely. And I'm sure if people in the next boat over knew that he was there and had been one of the leading characters on Queer as Folk, I'm sure they did want his autograph. Now, he's an interesting beast, that's for sure. Very intelligent man and very,
our youngest daughter was starstruck in a bad, bad way, and I have a photograph of her and Hal. And I have a feeling we're going to print that out on nice glossy photo paper from the printer. And I have a feeling my youngest will draw Hal Sparks like a gun for the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, that was a good experience for her, that's for sure. By the way, I encountered someone who knows you, and they're from your neck of the woods, so to speak, for lack of a better term. And I asked them if they knew you.
Mm-hmm.
Guy said, yeah. You know what he told me?
What's that?
He said he's a hell of a nice fella, and he will do anything he can for you.
That's high praise.
I thought so, too.
That's humbling, Jim. Thank you very much.
Well, it's not humbling. It's just a supreme compliment, and I think it speaks well of you. And of all things, to have met somebody who knows you around here, I thought, well, and knows you personally, for him to say that. And this is not a person who would give a compliment freely, I can tell you that. This guy was not in a good mood.
Oh. Well, I hope his mood improved.
Well, I do too, but, I mean, his face seemed to brighten a little bit, and the tone of the conversation changed. And I thought, well, you know, I think I'm going to share this with Bob when he gets back.
That's very nice. That's very nice to hear.
Well, listen, I hope everything is well, and hope everything is well with Wayne and people like that.
Yeah, I haven't really made much mention of that because I haven't been on the air since then, but I'm glad you did. We're sending out all kinds of good thoughts to Wayne, Boss Man Wayne. Wayne had a stroke last week, or week before last now. But
yeah.
he is recovering nicely, Jim. Even while I was gone, I was staying in contact with him.
Yeah. In fact, I called him, and you were on the phone with him, and I just wanted to let him know I was thinking about him. Ironically, you know, he told me that you were on the phone with him briefly, and I wish him well. And
yeah, I think that was from in port at St. Thomas.
Right, and, you know, he's the kind of person who has a lot of determination and a lot of spirit, and I wish him well, and I hope that he will recover rapidly and be able to regain all of his faculties.
He has done better than expected, and he's getting a lot of his strength back. And he's got, you know, he's got the right attitude. And anybody who's ever heard him call into the program knows that. So if anybody can lick it and come back as near to 100% as can be, it'll be Wayne.
Well, I concur totally, and glad you had a safe trip back and an enjoyable trip around the islands. And
oh, it was wonderful. We did get slowed down in Atlanta, of course. We were supposed to be home by 3:30 Saturday afternoon.
Wait, Hartsfield?
Yes.
Lovely place, isn't it?
Well, but we were waiting and everything, and they said there'll be some delays. We're doing some maintenance work on the aircraft, and you know, I'm one of those people, Jim. You know, I'm not a glass half empty kind of guy, but that doing maintenance on the aircraft that's about to take you 600 miles home, you know. So I'm up at the counter going, we're not talking about like the wings hanging off or anything. Oh, no. There was a problem with the lavatory. And you know what I think, Jim? I think they're taught to always say, no, there was a problem with the lavatory. Because I got to thinking back, and the three times I've been on a flight that was delayed for maintenance reasons, every time they've said, no, we're working on the lavatory.
Well, I'll tell you, Bob, I've been on some pretty rough flights, both overland and overseas. And I've been through some rough storms and stuff like that, a lot of turbulence. And I'll tell you, that's the safest place that I feel, is to go in the bathroom and just sit it out. For more reasons than one, because, I mean, you know, when you have all...
Yeah, you don't want to be found like that after the crash. I mean, it would... Yeah.
I mean, you think, well, it's in the tail of the plane, and hopefully it'll drop off and maybe it'll float, like I guess some people thought the stern of the Titanic would, but nonetheless... been there, and like I say, I just wanted to share that with you, and also the good wishes toward Wayne, okay?
All right, thanks, Jim. You have a good night.
And you too, sir.
Bye. Bye. It's nice to know people are out there and say decent things about you once in a while. That is. Thank you, Jim. That was gratifying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, is this me?
That's you.
Oh, hi, Bob. Chris Moscow. I got a funny story for you.
Okay.
We have this great little radio station, community radio station in town, very progressive. And I was just finishing up my Wednesday afternoon jag show. And the manager called in, and he said, darn, the guy down from 4 to 5 aren't going to make it. They're in a meeting. You take it over, and you can do whatever you want with the time. Just can you say? And I said, sure. So I got to thinking, and quickly downloaded your February 2nd show, and I introduced it. Bob Kincaid, he's a host of an internet program, and I played it, and all of a sudden, about halfway through it, both lines lighted up, and they were taken in the office, and you know, I was furious. You got the left wing Michael Savage on the air.
Oh God, not that!
And
I don't talk that poorly, do I?
Mad because you know, we can talk about dire things all day as long as we don't get emotional about them.
Right.
I thought that was funny that, you know, I walked in the manager's office and he said, what did you play? And I said, I played a syllabob, sir. And he said, you sure got people angry.
Oh my, am I banned in Moscow now?
So, of course, he wasn't opposed to it, but at that station, we hardly ever get phone calls about anything. You know, we're Pacifica Radio, and we broadcast. We're pretty much a left-wing. We have all kinds of programming, but we do a whole lot of political programming, and it delighted me that I keep people off by playing you.
Well, if I contributed to a little aneurysm somewhere, a right-wing aneurysm somewhere in Idaho, I feel the better for having done so, Chris. I appreciate
it. That was a great show, that February 2nd show. That was one of your better ones.
Wow.
Okay, so I just thought I'd tell you the story.
Well, I appreciate it, Chris. You have yourself a good evening.
Yeah, and
let me know if I ever do get banned in Moscow, okay?
Well, you're heard more than just on the licensed radio station, if you know what I mean.
I do indeed. Thank you, Chris, and have a great evening.
You too.
All right, bye now. From Moscow, Idaho, that's Chris, and you know what? There's something kind of pleasant about coming back from the Caribbean and finding out that one is on, if nothing else, maybe pirate radio. I didn't, one of the things, I posted this on Twitter, I guess, Saturday evening when I was just sort of, getting used to being back home. We walked through a little shop, and I'm real persnickety about my T-shirts. I won't just wear any T-shirt. It's gotta speak to me. And I saw one, and this was in, we walked through a little shop in St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, and I saw it hanging there, and I thought, well, we'll be coming back this way. I don't want to schlep it around with me, because, you know, you don't want to do that, carrying bags full of stuff. And we didn't go back that way, so I didn't get the T-shirt, but it was wonderful. It was black. It had the skull and crossbones on it. It said, the beatings will cease when morale improves. And I don't, you know, on a number of levels, it just spoke to me. Yeah, one of which was, you know, that's kind of like the Rapiglican approach to life, isn't it? I mean, the Rapiglicans took us into Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, we will bring you democracy if we have to kill the whole country to do it. The beatings will cease when morale improves. That's the one that got me. Onward we go. Lines open, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. It's about 23 minutes past the hour. We're almost halfway done with the program. Let's see what's happening. Oh, rats. Okay, let's try this. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward in Dallas.
Well, hey, Edward.
Well, you were talking about planes and all that, and I thought of a little story about a friend of mine years ago. He was an executive for Ozark Airlines. I shouldn't have said that, but anyway, I did. Anyway, he used to fly from Chicago down to Wichita, Kansas to visit for the weekend. For some reason or other, he loved Wichita, Kansas. Everybody else there was trying to get the hell out of there. And so, anyway, I went to the airport to meet him. And that's before the days of jetways and all that stuff. And the plane landed, and they put the ladder up, everything, and the door opened, and all the passengers were getting out just laughing their heads off, just laughing and laughing. And then there was my friend Ted talking to the pilot and the flight attendants, and they were all laughing. And he came in, and I said, "What are you all laughing about?" He said, "Well, we got on the plane in Chicago, and we taxied it out on the runway, and the pilot came on the horn and said, folks, we're going to be here for at least 45 minutes to an hour. So the flight attendants will pass among you and take your drink orders, or you can have free soft drinks and peanuts." So the flight attendants did all of that, and then they had just finished doing that when all of a sudden the pilot came on the horn again and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have been cleared for immediate takeoff." Well, the flight attendant was rather flustered, so she said, "Ladies and gentlemen, put your tray in an upright position, your seat in an upright position, fasten your seat belts, and hold your drink in one hand and your nuts in the other. They laughed all the way from Chicago to Wichita, Kansas.
I guess the folks at Southwest still have a little bit of fun with their flights, but that's one thing. Every flight I've been on, serious, serious, serious.
Well, Brandon did wasn't serious in those days. They had the flight attendants had these really weird costumes they wore because they wore big bouffant hairdos in those days, so they had these big bubbles over their heads to protect their bouffant hairdos. Well, that was long ago and far, far away. Glad to have you back. I've missed you.
Well, I missed it. I've been conflicted, Edward, to tell you the truth. On the one hand, I missed this microphone like crazy and all of y'all, but by the same token, I could have done another week down there. As long as I got my solid white beekeeper suit and could, I grew up in Alabama and got sunburned. I've gotten sunburned up here. Now it's a whole different sun down there. It's literally like a different sun. It comes down.
Oh yeah. I grew up in eastern North Carolina. In fact, I learned to swim in the Atlantic Ocean. I would not recommend that to anybody.
Rather some strong currents and cold water?
Just a few. I got in a riptide one day, and I thought I was a goner.
Well, Ferg was, well, everybody went out in the water except me. Funny, I'm the Aquarius of the family, but I don't get in the water. But they all went out and had a good, but Ferg was going further and, hey, come back here. And they warned us when we landed in the Bahamas at Little San Salvador. They said, don't get froggy out there. The currents are strong.
Uh-huh, yep.
So fortunately, he was busy chasing around his shipboard romance and didn't feel too much of the lure of the sea.
Well, it's that time in his life.
Indeed.
What I mean.
Indeed, and he's a crestfallen, heartbroken little fellow, and I keep telling him, well, you know, you'll get over it.
Oh, well, take care, and welcome back.
Well, thank you, Edward. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much.
Take care. So. Bye now.
Bye.
Edward calling from Dallas. And let's see. We're about halfway done with the program. I gotta make mention of something simply because, well, it's necessary. Before I left on vacation, I mentioned that I put on a real hard mention for contributions, and I got to do it again because what I said has come true. John Fox, who covered for me so ably and did a wonderful job in my absence and for which I am incredibly grateful, mentioned it as well. But with the exception of a very small handful of you, contributions have dried up to almost nil. We are at literally the halfway point of February where we should be talking about 1,250 bucks on our monthly fundraising goal. Well, we've raised 570. Not a good sign for making a second month in a row of actually reaching our fundraising goal. You know, we did it in January, and that was so cool. It's just nice not to sweat that. But, you know, January goes to February, and February goes to March. So that means, you know, well, it's kind of like the punchline to that old joke, you know, coffee breaks over, back on your head, Bob. $570 bucks halfway through February, which means bad things for the rest of the month. If you can hit the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, the tab is contribute. Just hit the PayPal button. Do what you can. Remember, if you contribute $10 a month, if you're a member of the Thrifty 250, that means you're giving something like less than 5 cents per hour for each hour of programming. Not a bad bargain. Not a bad bargain at all, I should say, especially for something where you get an opportunity to actually be part of it all, such as we try to create here. But the PayPal button needs some attention. It's been pretty lonely. So if you please. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so you mentioned that, you know, the women folk in your family just wanted to lay around. Well, women, they need to rest. Shit.
Well, you know what? That's why I didn't make any snarky comments. It's like, you know, just lay out, Agnes. Just relax.
No, that sounds like you had a good time. I like the whole discussion about the cigars. I bet. Shit, I bet. You don't get access to them here.
No. And it was, you know, it's just nice. I mean, I've never done that before, fired up a Cuban cigar before the show starts. And, you know, immigration will probably be, or I don't know, customs or whoever will probably be on my doorstep before the show's out. But by God, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I thought that was interesting what you were talking about. You and who was the woman that, is that, she's from Arizona?
Yeah, that's Fancy.
Fancy, talking about, you know, it's like, yikes, how do you deal with the whole service industry, foreign working hell in Indonesia? I mean, when I was traveling in Asia, and I was always, my issue was like, yikes, you know, because you need to be conscious of what people are doing for you and what you're doing and, wow, why am I just surrounded by all these white people and with black people serving, you know, yeah, all that stuff really gets...
It was really bothersome, Sandra, because, especially because of, and I mean no disrespect, because they are incredibly good at what they do. I mean, incredibly good. They know your name after the first, you know, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
And they remember your name for the entire week. And then they get a new crop of people to remember their names the next week. But it was, and again, I want to do this right and not do a disservice. There is something, and this comes from me being from Alabama. Okay, let's establish that. This is my hang up and not anybody else's. This is me. But there is something about having a dark skinned person refer to me as Mr. Bob that just made me a little queasy.
Yeah, no. It's definitely, all that is just really tricky. And, I mean, like, you know, I've done a lot of traveling, and I have to say that, you know, I'm always sort of just taken aback with the discrepancy, you know, because often, more times than not, I was forever not opening my mouth because I'm black with dreadlocks. I could be from anywhere, not American. Because it was worthwhile to keep my mouth shut a lot. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I remember I had a dear friend at CNN.
Yeah.
I had a dear friend at CNN who was Japanese-American. Her parents had been in the internment camps. She was beautiful. Oh, my God, she was beautiful. But she had this urge somewhere in her youth to go find her roots. So off to Japan she went. And she said, as a Japanese American woman entering Japan, oh, all the gaijin, all the, you know, white, round-eyed, fair-haired people, nah, you don't have to speak Japanese. And she said, but I get there and I'm as American as everybody else. And they're, what are you, stupid? Because she didn't speak Japanese.
Mm.
So no, I understand what you're getting at, and sadly, I did some research on what it's like for folks that work those cruises, and you know,
yeah.
we asked them, and they are, you know, they're forthcoming, and you know, the reality is they sign on through an agency in either Indonesia or the Philippines. They pay a horse gagging load of money to the agency. And then they are hired on board ship. And they are aboard ship for 10 months and they get to go home for 2. And then aboard ship for 10, home for 2. And like that, and there are people who make complete careers of that, Sandra. You know, I met guys who were, you know, 35 years old, had 6 kids, and had never been around for the birth of one of them. And
well, I mean, if you look at, you know, the globally speaking, I mean, that job has to be fairly coveted, actually.
Well, that's what they told me.
And, you know, to get a look-see and even get on board is probably, you know, a huge load of patronage and God knows what goes on in the Philippines and wherever. But, I mean, you know... What can you do? I mean, at least you were inquiring about their lives. I suppose God knows the sort of treatment they encountered.
I saw my fair share of ugly Americanism, not among our group.
No, but I mean, I'm sure it varies a lot, you know, from just really a horror show to, you know, folks like you guys. So, anyway, but
I think we have to pay attention to that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to, you know, because, well, it's just sort of, otherwise it's really, to me, it's really uncomfortable and kind of weird. I can't be frolicking and just pretend it's not going on. Like those people on the boat who were, like, upset because they had to interrupt their vacation in Haiti during an earthquake, you know, that kind of madness.
Yeah. Yeah,
you don't. You know, you're not one of those. Well, anyway, but I'm sure you have.
Well, no, I did some digging around, and I found a story of a woman who got word aboard ship, and she was with Holland America Lines. This was several years back, but she got word aboard ship that she was about to be fired, and so she jumped overboard in Puget Sound.
Try to get to America.
Well, I don't know. I think it was a suicide.
Oh, okay.
Because we're talking about, you know, at a certain height, water becomes the equivalent of concrete, you know?
Okay, yeah. No, I didn't, you know. Wow.
And people who have to pay these exorbitant fees. I mean, I've told stories about the bad old days of coal mining here in Appalachia where, and you know, my grandfather went through this thing, where you sign on with the coal company, you sign a contract with them, and then they advance you your pay, and then turn around and charge you double and make in making you buy your pick, your shovel, your gloves, your lantern, lunch bucket, all of that kind of stuff, right? And so you wind up in perpetual debt slavery to the company.
Yeah.
That's what that old line about "I owe my soul to the company store" means. Well, the same thing goes on in the 21st century in this industry. Some shipping lines, some cruise ship lines are worse than others.
Right.
But, for instance, a guy signed on as a cook from India, and the cruise ship company advanced him $1,400 to include his airfare to the port to board ship. Well, that was billed against his pay. And his pay for the whole 10 months wasn't going to be more than $7,000. So he starts out in a $1,500 hole. That's pretty brutal.
Wow.
And there's nothing particularly isolated or unique about the stories like that. And one of the, you know, there's all kinds of little tactics they use, like making sure now the Holland America line that we were on uses primarily only Indonesian and Filipinos. But some cruise lines make sure that they have a lot of Romanians, a lot of Turks, make sure that they got a lot of people who don't speak anybody else's language. That way they can't organize.
Yeah, I can imagine some of the work practices are pretty horrific. But obviously you're able to reconcile it all.
Not fully. We were treated so wonderfully, so absolutely wonderfully. I just hope that they're because these, bear in mind, the shifts for 10 months, Sandra, 10 months, the shifts are 7 days a week, 12 hours a day.
Oh, well, they work every day?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know
No
that.
Day off.
Until they get 2 months off.
Yeah. And I read an interview with one guy. He said, "When I get off, he said, I spend the first month home asleep."
Yeah, I know about to say that. That's definitely pretty brutal. Did you have to do any panels, or you just were there?
Oh no, I was audience.
Okay, good. I mean, good for you. So you didn't have to do all that madness.
Right. I just sat on my hands and frankly, being quiet and listening and learning was more than a little bit fascinating. I couldn't help as I watched the panels just thinking, God, I wish everybody could be hearing this. Because to hear things like Alan Grayson saying that you know, he was in a meeting with Barack Obama and several other progressives or liberals or whatever we're calling ourselves were in there, that they said, well, you know, assuming you get everything else done you're doing, you know, what's your biggest to do after everything else? And, you know, you can imagine what you and I would say. Well, you know, moving toward universal single-payer health care, reforming the military, getting the graft out of the Pentagon, you know, stuff like that. Or re-enshrining habeas corpus, ending domestic spying. No. The answer that Barack Obama gave was his big concern was entitlement reform.
He actually said that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, see, and that's what I was asking when you're talking about the panel discussion, talking about whether that man is a progressive or not, and, you know, not to take away from the trip, but if the budget is any indication, you know, we're entering in an era of just hell on the backs of the poor. Because he wants to cut these block grants, which I was, like, flabbergasted. I'm thinking, are you kidding me?
I looked at all of that stuff today and just... I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Yeah, you know, we're going to cut Pell Grants because, well, you know, and there's this whole talking out of both sides of its mouth thing that the administration, well, you know, we're cutting some, but we're increasing others because we want to invest in the future.
No, the thing is, though, but nothing can stop the idea that this fool and his people, gave the tax cuts. You see what I'm saying? That's what's so horrific. And the fact that they have the nerve to even look at a camera or speak. After what they did, and now they're going to turn around and try to cut a small amount on the backs of the poor because it's so blatantly okay to annihilate the poor because they have no voice. I mean, and you need to get campaign contributions. I mean, the shit is just real blatant now, Bob. You know what I'm saying? It's like, wow, you know?
The Pell Grants thing really did blow me away, but there's some other stuff out there that's more than a little bit disturbing. Some of the other cuts that are contemplated. Let's see, National Park Service Climate Change Monitoring and Response. That loses $4.5 million. High School Graduation Initiative. Goodbye $50 million. The cops hiring, supporting local law enforcement, $298 million get cut. And when I'm listing these numbers, $4.5 million, that's the entirety of their budgets, Sandra.
No, but they're revamping the emergency activation network, though, and they're activating some sort of presidential code or part of it that's never been utilized before. And, of course, me, I had visions of, oh, what? Some sort of presidential face popping up now, like 1984. I know it's made up.
Yeah, you mean where the Indian used to be in the test pattern?
Well, you know what I'm saying. It's like
greetings, citizen.
Right, they're sort of revamping that. I mean, I don't know. I think I was just laughing because there's no way that people are still believing that this man is a progressive. I think he's just one of those third. What do they call it now? It's not the DLC, but it's the third way.
Third way, yeah, third. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I was screwing up there. Those budget cuts that I just mentioned, those are what the Republicans want to do.
They also want to gut George Bush's community health centers that are in a lot of rural America. Apparently, there's a lot of pushback on that from Republicans. They're like, hello, we need these fucking clinics. So, I mean, good luck. Good luck with the cuts. That's all I got to say.
Well, I can't see something... I just can't see something working out real well where you're cutting the ability of people to get educated and thereby better themselves. Because one of the things that was brought up in one of these panels was the stunning disparity between in the unemployment numbers and the wage loss and job loss numbers between college educated and high school educated people. It is mind blowing.
Oh, you mean the actual? Are you talking about the employment rate or just the lack of joblessness among people with high school or less?
Well, if you're high school or less and the numbers of people within the unemployment numbers, it's a staggering number. It's bad enough for people with college educations. If you don't have that, your chances of ever crawling out of that hole are something approaching nil.
And then now the road to getting that college degree is being cut, is being strangled off because no one can afford the cost. The states are privatizing them by charging more fees. That's the same thing. At least that's how it works in this state. And they want to cut the Pell Grants and start charging interest on loans right away. It's just incredible. He's talking out of both sides because that's not investment. I don't know what that is.
Nor I, and yet, look, this seems to be a battle to the bottom, if that's an appropriate way to describe it, Sandra. Because there's nothing particularly progressive or liberal about Obama's budget, and yet it's being balanced, like I just pointed out, it's being balanced against a Republican proposal that is absolute economic madness.
Well, no, but that's the thing. But that's what some, you know, a couple of commentators that I follow has predicted, that Obama would be more than comfortable if the House changed parties. I mean, this is his comfort zone.
It gives him cover?
Well, and it also reflects his, deeply conservative beliefs. And, you know, I'm sorry, and it's not like it's a...
Yeah, I mean, really, of all the places that you can go and find a little bit of budget money to cut, cutting out the LIHEAP program?
And the WIC, you know, that do you know how valuable that WIC is? And the percentage of women that it touches is 45% of all pregnant women in this country, Bob. We're not talking about a few, okay?
No, and of course there is the natural, not natural, but the typical assumption that, well, you know those kind of pregnant women, right?
Well, no, but the thing is, it's not. I mean, you know, once again, the
no, it's not. I mean, I see it in use here in West Virginia constantly.
Yeah, but the rhetoric is so far behind to the point where the people who use WIC probably think it's a bad program. You know that whole canard.
Oh, sure.
You're getting government programs up the yin-yang, but of course you're not getting any government programs, and you believe that shit until you don't get it anymore because it's been cut, and then you're blaming some immigrants. You know how it works.
Oh, yeah, and even if you can manage to... sort of live inside your own skull with the fact that you're dealing with the public welfare system, the hoops you have to jump through, you know, the recertification meetings and the show up in the office and all of that stuff, you know, that's all designed to make you feel like you're being a really bad human being.
Yeah, and not to mention the search out to even find some of these places, because they make it as difficult as possible to even locate a food stamp, or you know what I'm saying. So it's just nonstop. But I just can't believe how out of touch they are in the Beltway, because all the polling is pointing towards. I mean, the people are really confused. They want all the services. They don't want any taxes, but they don't mind if we raise taxes on the rich. I mean, it's very schizophrenic. The polling, it reflects people who don't know what's going on, and that's not a criticism on them. Look at the media.
Sure.
I mean, it's just, you know, I
well, that was another one of those discussions that was had on board the ship that I thought was fascinating. The question of does the right wing control the media? And the question and the point arose about, you know, what would it look like if we had a liberal media? And the point was made that was that if we had a liberal media, it would be just as disgusting as the one we have now, or as the media we have now. It's a plural word. Because in the end, it would still be corporate. It's the corporate nature that contributes so much to how the media fail. Because there's an agenda there that has to be pushed. Now, you know, Fox is out front with it because, well, you know, the rubber mask is off and they're Radio Rwanda and we just know it. A big report out from Media Matters in the last few days. Another one of those Fox insiders coming along saying, "Oh yeah, this is a whole blue smoke and mirrors job," and nobody's really surprised anymore. At least nobody who's paying attention. But the whole media the infrastructure is screwed. I mean, come on. I guess you saw the news, and I know it doesn't, you know, it's not one of those things that you sat around wringing your hands about, Sandra, but I guess you saw the news that Keith Olbermann's going to Current TV.
Oh, yeah, no. I did notice that. And that's, they have, what, about 60% of the households that MSNBC have or something?
Well, I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I know this much. That means I will never see Keith Olbermann.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like they're not, you know, it's not very accessible, that TV. I never even heard of it until I saw that report, truth be told. Is that Al Gore's bit?
I think it is. They do good work, but, you know, if you do, it's the whole if a tree falls in the forest, and no, it's that. You can do the greatest work in the world, but if the American people can't see it, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can just look at just what went down for the last 3 weeks in Egypt. You know, how you, unless you had high-speed internet connection with the, you know, Al Jazeera English, you see what I'm saying? I mean, that's where I was. I was able to go and look at that.
Yeah, Jug of Punch in the chat room just pointed out that Current TV, Jug of Punch said 226 on my cable. 226? 226? Wow. You know, my cable doesn't go above 50, I don't think.
Yeah, I have to see. I don't even know if I don't, maybe I have it on mine. I mean, I don't even watch TV that much, but I'll check it out. But when is he supposed to go there?
Well, that much I don't know. I just caught the one little blurb and moved on because I was, I was still incommunicado. But
there's a lot of utopian chit chat about, oh well, he'll get in on the ground floor of this sort of never ending platform of the internet. And I do think there's some merit to the potential for audience growth there, but there's still an owner issue if we don't take care of keeping the net accessible. You know what I'm saying?
And there was discussion of that as well, and I'm going to be talking about that at some point later, because one of the things that was put out there is there's a new aggregator coming along, and it's a smartphone app, and it will make it possible for, you know, people to just use their phones and hear and see stuff.
No, but who are controlling those?
Bingo, and that's the elephant in the room. If we don't have net neutrality, then we can. It's become less accessible and not more. It's become less. It's become more fragile and not less.
Well, and then there's the whole digital Darwinism that's going on with the the AOL purchase of. And I wasn't too keen about that. I'm like, what? You know, she got $300 million to sell off her. Huffington Post.
Right, and how much of that $300 million is going to go to the people who provided her free content for all this?
That's what I'm saying. There's that. It's just kind of, it's just more cannibalization because haven't we been down this road before with AOL and Time Warner? Remember that?
Well, I remember when AOL Time Warner made CNN the slipshod mess that it is.
Right. Well, now we're, I'm sort of thinking, I don't know. That sort of stuck in my mind. I mean, I don't care if she sells it or not, but, don't, what's the thing? Don't piss down my back and say,
tell me it's raining?
Because that's what I was thinking. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. As I shift over to Raw Story or wherever the hell else I can go for an aggregate site, because people were moaning, who is the comment community? Comment community, my ass. I'm out. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Anyway, but I just thought that was a bit.
Well, this is where we cue up the Steve Miller Band saying, play and take the money and run.
Yeah, it's so scandalous, I don't know. I mean, I kept reading posts on there, trying to explain it away and justify, I don't know. Should I be laughing, Bob?
I don't know. I just wanted to drop Ariana a note and say, don't spend it all in one place.
I know. I was like, damn, bitch, you lucked out. You can find some idiots who don't pay you that much. That's like Facebook and a $50 billion Goldman Sachs investment. It's like, can you say WebVan? You remember all those .com things?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't, Facebook is like whatever, but I can see that going the way of, God knows.
Well, you know what? Facebook has a little PR problem right now. I don't know if you've noticed, but for all those months that people were saying, Facebook has some real privacy issues.
Yeah,
Well, they do. Because it turns out that the chamber, well, you know this business with the Chamber of Commerce. They hired anti-union lawyers who then hired Palantir and a couple of other data thug outfits to threaten and intimidate and take down people who were critical of the chamber. One of the people that they attacked directly was Brad Friedman.
Yeah, and they want to use Facebook to establish paths. I know that,
and they did that. That's the whole thing. Right. It's a term that I'm learning what it means right now, called scraping.
Well, okay, that's a good one. Yeah,
and they scraped Facebook, and Facebook was scrapable.
Right, and the thing is that not only that, but the way they can configure the data to put scenarios together and narratives together, all that courtesy of, you know, people liking every fucking thing they come across. It's like, hey, wake up.
Yeah.
You might want to check yourself. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. So Facebook, yeah. I don't know what to say about that, but is a $50 billion investment, you know, is it really going to hold up, or is it going to morph into something even more sinister? You know?
Well, I mean, come on. Look where the $50 million came from.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I like, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I like Twitter. I find that technology quite amusing. But I take it at face value.
I do, too. But the thing is, all of these things have to be, and yeah, you're right. It is reminiscent of the dot-com bubble of the late 90s, you know, where all these things popped up, and they were monetized at ludicrous, stupid monetary levels, and Wall Street was just wetting itself. And yet none of these things ever figured out a way to make any money. And so when they do finally come along and they come up with the monetization model, Sandra, lo and behold, it's once again on our backs. It's our data, our privacy, our everything.
Well, now Facebook is trying to figure out how they can, you know, they have to pull back a bit, but monetizing people's posts. You know what I'm saying? It's sort of, I mean, the whole process is very disturbing, you know, which is why I invest very little. But I was taken aback by the sort of the scraping or the paths that they're creating. That stuff bugs me. I'm like, yeah.
And to be fair, the people who did it should literally be sued into insolvency. And very important on top of this, and I hope to maybe get Brad Friedman on the program to talk about this some, because once again, you know, he will be in the forefront of it, and he'll know it chapter and verse. But this whole chamber thing was run by a bunch of lawyers. Now, those guys should have bar complaints filed against them yesterday. They should be disbarred day after tomorrow.
Well, no, but see, they make a good point with the story, though, because of how it is a sort of real combination of government and corporation, like, for real, for real. So who's going to prosecute them? You see what I'm saying?
Okay, there's another one of those panel discussions aboard the ship. See what you do? The comment was put up, and it was during the, I think it was during the is he a progressive, is he not discussion, and it was all about, well, you know, why won't his Justice Department do something about, you know, pick one? And so, once again, I'm committed to sitting on my hands because I've got 3 hours a night to say whatever I want to. And, you know, there's a lot of people who paid a lot of money to get to ask these questions. So I'm just, you know, like the tennis ball and the duct tape. And it never gets mentioned. You know, you want to know, I mean, come on. You want to know, if you want to know why these corporate thugs are not being prosecuted, you need only know what Eric Holder did from the time he left the Department of Justice to the time he was named Attorney General. He was corporate counsel and actively worked a case in which he worked out a sweetheart deal for Chiquita Banana, whose board of directors actively suborned murder for hire and blew away labor organizers in Colombia. And not a one of them, who were all Eric Holder's clients, did a damn day in prison. Now, once you know that, you don't have to ask any more questions about why the corporate thugs aren't being prosecuted.
Oh, no, I caused my foreign policy professor's jaw to drop when I gave that little bit of information. He was like, oh, didn't know, didn't have a response. I'm like, yeah, these people, they're coming from that. But since you mentioned that, I must say, you heard about Ecuador, they told Chevron to pay the fuck up. $8 million.
Yeah.
I was like, well, let's watch and see how that plays out, because Chevron did every damn thing short of killing and replacing the judges themselves, and they still lost.
Well, you know, I think a little telex should be sent down to the president of Ecuador. Dear sir, don't get on small aircraft.
Well, I just know, but it's, you know, I was really happy just to see that. You know what I mean? Because these corporate, you know, Chevron, their whole thing was like, well, we run shit. We can do what the hell we want. I mean, this is their language. And if we can't do what we want, we're going to get the U.S. to intercede, which is what the U.S. did. And Ecuador still came down with this ruling. Now, I'm not too sure how it plays out, but I don't know. I was just really happy to see that headline.
Well, yeah, and but would it, is it too much imagination for us to look to the day when the cable goes down to Ecuador from the Department of State saying no more food for you?
Well, you know what? This is the thing in Egypt. No more food for you in Egypt too. I didn't realize that the U.S. shipped, you know, controlled like the amount of the wheat that goes there. You know?
Yeah.
But, and I mean, there's you know, I mean, I worry about what's going on.
Before I left, I was watching a video about why the food shortages happened in Egypt, and guess whose door it comes back to? Wall Street speculators.
Yeah. Oh no. I mean, it's terrible. It's terrible what's going on with the
for literally decades. We maintained a policy of not allowing overt, you know, the real roulette wheel speculation in the food market. And then a few years back, maybe it was the late 90s, one of the Wall Street banking houses, and of course it's one of the really nasty ones, went and said, we would like an exemption to be able to speculate in the food market. Well, they got it. And then shortly thereafter, everybody and their cousin got it. And I'm sure I'm working broad brush here, and I'm sure I'm missing out on some details. It's out there to find. And then the next thing you know, you got people going hungry in Egypt because food was dealt with the same way that the natural gas was dealt with by Enron. Remember when the Enron thugs were caught on tape giggling about putting the screws to Granny?
Yeah, I know. It's the same sort of machinations was going on. Yeah, with food.
Yeah, with you know, because they're so crazed for profit. They're all the way down into the Maslow stuff, you know, food, shelter.
Oh yeah, well it's funny though because Haiti found a way to say no and burn some damn Monsanto seeds. The state of that place, they still are able to sort of say, oh my God, you know, we can't let this take over what little farming industry we have. I mean, I thought that was interesting, and I also think that it's interesting that they're issuing a passport possibly to Aristide to come back. And why did Hillary interrupt the crisis in Egypt to fly down to Haiti right quick? Did you notice that?
Yeah, I saw mention of it.
Obviously, that shit is out of control. And if they're going to let Aristide back, she must have pissed off what little government there is there. Anyway, I don't know. You know, I'm sort of rambling.
Well, but that's okay. I really appreciate all the catch-up because I got a lot of catching up to do.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, listen, you sound relaxed and, you know, don't let all this get to you too much, but we're all happy to have you back and best to the family.
All right, thanks, Sandra. You take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Yeah, I am. I'm mellowed out. You know, they say that part of the thing is that the soil in Cuba contains high levels of lithium. That might be it. Because, I don't know, I don't think I've got a real good fit in me right now. But that's okay. Something will come along that'll. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that you, Bob?
It is Bob.
And I'm just very glad to hear you back. It's Clayton, man.
Oh, hey, Clayton. What's going on?
I was just listening this evening to Mr. Obama. Yeah, he's about as progressive as my guide dog. I'm giving up on the man. Have you kept up with what's going on in Kentucky?
Yes, I have all along. In fact, I had hoped to mention it either tonight or maybe try to get Jeff Biggers on the show tomorrow night to talk about what's going on. Big sit-in in the governor of Kentucky's office, Kentucky Rising. A number of people have simply gone to his office and sat down and said they're not leaving until he deals with the Appalachian apocalypse that he actively encourages in his state. Commonwealth. And Wendell Berry, the noted author and poet, is there as well, and he's part of it.
The interesting thing I find about that whole thing is I thought it was horrific in West Virginia. The number of mountaintops and hillsides that are blown out in Kentucky is probably twice to three times that of West Virginia.
Yeah, because they've got more mountains available, and that's why Clayton, I try to talk not about West Virginia but about Appalachia.
Absolutely, that's it. That's it. And nobody's been talking about Kentucky at all, specifically. But I didn't realize how bad it was down there. I knew it went on. I was down there back in the day where, you know, my homestead was, it's yellow there. It's pure yellow cake above the old house. You know, it's ready to roll down any time. But it's just amazing what they're doing down there. And I'm just really disappointed with Obama and everything that he's doing. Everything from WIC. I'm surprised that he doesn't start passing out cheese pretty soon. Cheese and beans and things like that to folks. No more welfare as we know it. But I don't understand what happened to this guy. And
I don't know that anything happened to him, Clayton. I mean, to be fair, I think it was one of those, you know, the Apostle Paul says in one of his letters, "Lo, I was all things to all people." And that's Barack Obama. Obama was never a progressive. Barack Obama was never a liberal. But a lot of us imposed our liberal hopes, our progressive dreams, onto him. And he was more than happy to ride along with them because they put him in the White House.
I had the chance in October of 07. I was leaving a meeting where he spoke. And as I'm leaving, all of a sudden I feel this hand lay on my right shoulder. I'm like, I don't like to be touched. And I'm like, flipped around. He says, "Well, you look like you've got something on your mind." And I got to sit down and talk to him for 15 minutes. The amazing thing was that he agreed with me on every point that I raised, including the outsourcing material. "Oh, we can't do anything about that. But what we can do is make it more expensive for them to do these things." And he hasn't done that at all. And I keep hearing it popping up in this legislation, that legislation, and it never comes to fruition that they're going to make it more expensive for people to outsource. Supposedly this tax bill at the end of December was going to take care of that. And I don't know of anybody at this point. If he'll be lucky if it's it'll be a shock that he's running against Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich in 2012.
This is where I kind of diverge, Clayton. I am convinced more now than ever that the Republicans did not want the presidency in 2008. I don't think they want it in 2012 either. Say that because he's doing too many things that they like. Now, they have to put up the dog and pony show of saying, "Well, you know, there's two men, and, you know, he's a Muslim." Some of that happened this past Sunday when John Boehner showed up on Meet the Prestitute with David Gregory. I can't tell people what to think. If they want to think he's a Muslim, that's their right as Americans.
Exactly.
You know, but that's all that is that's blue smoke and mirrors, Clayton. I'm brokering the Ten Commandments, but I would take a $5 bill or a $20 bill and lay odds, whatever odds anybody wanted, that he will be reelected in November 2012 because the Republican Party does not want the office. It will take at least 6 years of this. The bone-crushing austerity and the breakage of every bit of the social safety net in this country to put money back in the treasury for the Republicans to come back and steal.
And what did he exactly say about entitlements? Since when is Social Security and Medicare entitlements? We paid for that. This isn't entitlements. This is an insurance problem policy, both of them. And we paid for that insurance policy. And there's nobody treating it like that. They keep referring to it as entitlement. No, it's not. Entitlements is something that you're given because you're made to be entitled to it by an act of legislation. This is an insurance policy.
Right.
He gave it away immediately in December on the tax bill. And now, even though he said one thing, guess what he's doing? He's giving it away again. He wants to go with his cat food commission. And that's a, you know, on one hand he's saying, oh no, I can't live up to what they're doing now. And then on the other hand he says, oh, by the way, we're going to take care of these entitlements. Like, wait a minute, man. What are you doing here? But dude, I want to tell you, it's good to see you back. I would like to request it sometime when you have that, if you have that history week that we did.
Glad you're mentioning that, because yeah. I got one for us tomorrow night.
Whoa.
Yeah, the Prism West Virginia series will come back to the Horn tomorrow evening from 7, and I'm glad you raised it because I needed to get this said. We'll come back to the Horn from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. I won't have a regular show tomorrow night. There will be nothing going on at 6 p.m., but at 7 p.m., the American History Chat Series with Dr. Bill O'Brien will be back, and it'll be from 7 to 9, and it would, it'll be really, really informative, educational, and yes, even entertaining, and it'll be available on Ustream and on the regular Horn stream.
If you ever get a chance to put that week that you put on, what was it, 6 months ago?
It was late June, early July.
Yeah, and I'd like to hear it again. I should, or put it on a podcast.
Well, it should be up on. If it's not up there, I'll try to make a point of chopping it up into digestible hunks and get it up there. But you know what? Even though you've mentioned your vision issues, the audio still plays. If you can go to ustream.tv and go to the Horn channel there, it's all still archived.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the audio is easy to get.
Huh, I'll have to look into that. The other thing is exactly which Caesar do you think Obama would fit into?
That's a tough call because it's looking at all that ancient history stuff has been more of a matter of looking at the overall big picture. He's one of the manager Caesars, one of the ones who wasn't related to Caesar. You know, that all peters out and dies out fairly quickly. He's certainly no Marcus Aurelius.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe
I was thinking about somebody around the 230 BC AD would fit it, I think.
Yeah, around in there. You know, maybe a Hadrian type.
There you go. It's sort of fits. Anyway, dude, it was good to hear your voice back. Last week was good, but hey, we got to have the master behind the switch. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Clayton.
You have a good day.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And about 15 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock here in the Eastern Time Zone, we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Hi, it's Andy.
Hey, Andy.
How you doing?
I'm back. You know, I'm just kind of...
Yeah, welcome back.
Thanks. I mean, it's just tough to come back from paradise and, you know, back on your head.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a great time.
But I did. We did. Not I did. We did. And, you know, you can't... I got to thinking about it because, you know, you walk around that beautiful sunshine and you go, I could live here. But you know what? Sooner or later, you got to get up and go to work. You got to go to work in paradise. You got to go to work in the snow. You got to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't all vacation. What I was feeling, I think, Andy, was this urge to be on vacation, you know, for about a year. Maybe 6 months. But a week was good.
So what'd you think of Alan Grayson?
I think he's a great guy. He's obviously a very, very intelligent man.
Well, he's an Harvard-trained economist, man.
Yeah, I mean, I also think he was probably, how do I say this without sounding like an ass and pissing people off? He was too smart for his own good.
He doesn't know how to play the kiss-up game, that's for sure.
Well, there's that, plus the fact that freshman members of Congress are supposed to be seen and not heard. And he was not going to play it that way. And he didn't.
No, not at all. That's for sure.
But he was, he's brilliantly intelligent. He has real-time answers. He has thought-out solutions. And he also realizes, at least after these 2 years, I think he realizes it ain't ever going to happen within the governmental structure as it exists.
Yeah, we need another Egypt here.
And that sadly, our buddy Horzak over at YouTube posted a clip from early February in which I was talking about the fact that Egypt ain't going to happen here.
The state house in Wisconsin, Bob.
Yeah, Wisconsin
is where the line gets drawn.
Well, this guy, yeah, this.
You want the tape? Bring out the National Guard. Let's go. Let's rock and roll, baby. He wants that scumbag governor wants to bring out the National Guard. We'll take him on. Let's go. Bring him out.
And you know what? If people in Wisconsin will go to the state house grounds and will stay there, and okay, we're going to have a protest on Saturday and we'll be gone by Sunday. No, it don't work like that, does it, Andy?
You know, collective bargaining is a human right. That is a UN right of labor to collect. We are going down a bad, bad road.
Yeah, and just...
labor cannot even collective bargain in this country?
And just, you know, just so folks know what we're talking about, this thug bastard in Wisconsin says that he, Scott Walker, interesting little piece of trivia for you, Andy. I saw a picture of him standing behind his campaign slogan, Wisconsin is open for business.
I know they're trying to steal the Illinois business because of the tax rates.
Well, what was brilliant about that is I looked at that and went, son of a gun, he's a thief. Guess where he got open for business from? He stole that from Joe Manchin. Now, if that tells you anything about Joe Manchin being a Democrat, that's plenty. But yeah, that whole open for business concept means we're going to screw everybody. But he says that he's going to take away collective bargaining rights for state workers, and if they don't like it, he'll call out the National Guard. Now that's some heavy-handed bully boy tactics.
That is fighting words. That is fighting words.
Interesting. VoteVets.org has already issued a statement saying it's unacceptable. Robin Eckstein, a former Wisconsin National Guard member, Iraq War vet from Appleton, Wisconsin, said, maybe the new governor doesn't understand yet that the National Guard is not his own personal intimidation force to be mobilized to quash political dissent. The Guard is to be used in case of true emergencies and disasters to help the people of Wisconsin, not to bully political opponents.
Right.
This is a very dangerous line the governor is about to cross.
Yeah, there's no question. I think in the rural areas and in more the red states, you don't see the foment and things that could get out of hand. But I think in the cities, in the urban areas, particularly New York, you know, where L.A., places like that, I think there's much more of a chance of things getting out of hand, of things really getting to a point where it's just too difficult on people. And that's where things start to get people start to get fired up. And it might not take too much to get something going because the disparities are so great and the pressures being put on working people have been coming. This is a savage environment. And Obama is just making it worse. I love, too, with that new budget he's got, he's going to cut the subsidies that they were giving for heating oil and heating gas.
Yeah, LIHEAP.
By half.
Low-income heating assistance. Right.
Right.
And by the way,
9 million people could be affected, could be out in the cold over that. 9 million people. They say 3 million families in the article I read.
Right. So multiply that by three, and yeah, it could be 8 million, it could be 9, it could be 12, depending on how you define family.
Right.
But this isn't just Walker in Wisconsin; it's Plenty in Minnesota; it's Kasich, I can't remember which, in Ohio.
No, and you got Christie in New Jersey.
Christie in New Jersey. And these things, there's nothing, or we need to understand, Andy, there's nothing organic about this.
Right. Don't let a good crisis go to waste.
This is
all about.
Yeah, this is a Republican strategy that has been completely and thoroughly thought out.
Absolutely. Starve the beast. Make sure you don't tax people. When it comes time, when the economy's in the toilet and you can't raise tax revenues because there's a whole bunch of us not working anymore, so they're not collecting the taxes, so of course you've got a revenue generation problem, where do you go? You go after the people we always wanted to get anyway. Get them unions. Bust them up. Bust them up. That's what it's all about. Cause this fake crisis because they didn't have the tax base. Of course, Obama has made it 10 times worse by going along with not taxing the rich and not taxing the inheritance tax, lowering that, making sure the rich didn't pay for the wars, which they always have in the past, making sure they don't contribute like they used to when we had a 90% top tax bracket, and they're paying nothing. They're contributing nothing to this country. So don't let a good crisis go to waste that they created. It's a man-made, artificial crisis of revenue.
Yeah.
So go get them. So go break up those public unions. Anyway.
Oh, and by the way, where Walker is concerned in Wisconsin, I found this one little factoid interesting. He's going after the public employees unions, except he's not going after the unions that supported him in the election. So while he's talking about busting up collective bargaining for everybody else, the state patrol, the local police, and fire departments are absolutely unchanged.
Out of the Mubarak playbook, I guess.
Well, it kind of sounds like it, doesn't it?
State employees a 15% raise right before you get yourself blown out of there to see if you could keep them under control. That's what Mubarak did. He gave them a big raise beforehand and money for their pension. Anyway, too, you were talking about Arianna Huffington.
Mm-hmm.
God, what a sellout. What a sellout. There was an article last Thursday in the Financial Times, and that was the only place I saw it. Did you know that she took pure cash? A lot of the other investors took cash and stock from AOL, but her payout was pure cash. I think it's something in the tune of $100 million out of the $315.
Like I said, somebody cue up the Steve Miller Band, play and take the money and run.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd like to know who her investors were in the Huffington Post. I have a good idea who they were.
Well, now, what's fascinating out of this, though, is that I'm sure there will be some sort of a non-compete agreement.
Well, she's the editor. She's got a job there, but it is telling that she takes $100 million in cash. She does not take stock. So what does that mean? That means she doesn't have a lot of confidence in the business taking off. If she had confidence, she would have taken some stock in that deal, but she didn't.
So well, look at the sweetheart deal that Don Blankenship got in the acquisition of Massey by Alpha Natural Resources. That was a $10 a share payout.
Wow.
Now, he had a bunch of stock. That's a bunch of $10 as a pop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you do when you because when you think that the thing's not going to fly, get it up front. But you know that better than I do.
Well, there's an article in the Financial Times. They were saying they were in a hard place to be able to grow. That probably she made the smartest deal of her life. She got out at the top because she's in a really tough spot where she wants to grow that business, she's really got to take on the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and places like the Washington Post. She's really got to take on the big media if she wants to grow. And that's not the niche they were in at all. So it would have been tough for her to grow, especially, too, she was spreading herself very thin because, well, you know the media probably better. You know the media better than I do. She had 26 different sections, and she was branching out all over the place, trying all kind of different.
Well, isn't it interesting that she announced, and I just thought of this, Andy, isn't it interesting that she announced that she was going to have this African-American spinoff.
And Hispanic spinoff.
And Hispanic right. spinoff, and then gone.
Right, right. So she was trying a lot of different things, I think, to try to boost revenue. And AOL paid 10 times revenue, which is a lot.
Well, you,
that's a lot. It better work. You better get some cash flows at, because they didn't make money until 2010.
But see, I'm kind of in a weird place, Andy, because I never understood the draw of Huffington Post in the first place. I mean, I got it from a vanity standpoint that, you know, if I could get approved, I could go clackety-clackety and type something up and have it posted there for no one to read. Or maybe hit the front page once in a while. But where was the money? The writers weren't getting paid. You know, some of the editorial staff was. But they were mainly just an aggregator. They were pulling stuff off AP. They were pulling stuff off this, pulling stuff off that.
Right, right, and I think you I've mentioned this to you before, and I've sent you emails that you've got to be very skeptical of Arianna Huffington and what her motives are, because she is an economist, she's a Cambridge, England trained economist. She comes from a very rich background. She was married to a Republican, Michael Huffington, who ran for Senate and put probably a record amount of money in his Senate campaign, but lost as a Republican. And Arianna Huffington has always been on the right until the last 5 or 6 years when she started with the Huffington Post.
Well, no, actually, yeah, it goes way back to the, God, it goes back into the Clinton administration. Wasn't Al Franken's foray into political media, wasn't that, didn't that run parallel with Arianna's? Wasn't there a program way back when called Strange Bedfellows that featured Al Franken arguing from the left and Arianna arguing from the right? Do I remember that right?
You remember Charles Grogan?
Sure.
Grogan used to have a show.
Grodin,
he was,
yeah.
Grodin, okay. And it was on the cable. Now, and I used to enjoy watching it because he was on the left and Arianna was on the right, and they used to go at it years ago. I'm not sure if Franken, but it very well could be that Franken could have vaguely, I think.
But it's after Michael Huffington takes it on the chin and loses, and she splits with him. That's when she suddenly becomes one of these born again liberals. And frankly, Andy, I'm skeptical of born again liberals. And I'll say some things here that may piss people off. I'm sorry. I'm skeptical of Ed Schultz because remember, for 30 years or so, he was a Rush Limbaugh wannabe until he figured out that shtick wasn't going to fly, and he becomes a born-again liberal.
Well, you know, he's funded. He was, the DLC came to him and offered him lots of money to promote the Democratic Party, to be the Rush Limbaugh for the DLC. And you will not hear him, he will bite his lip before saying a negative word against the most heinous of Democrats, of DLC, dyed-in-the-wool fascist Democrats. I mean, he will not say a negative word for forever. He's been like that. He just cannot. And Kent Conrad is the guy that comes to mind as one of the biggest scumbags in the Democratic Party. We shouldn't even call him to have a Democrat in front of his name. But you cannot get Ed Schultz to say bad things about bad, bad Democrats.
But there's, it's not just Schultz. There's a bunch of them, Andy.
Yeah,
and
there are.
I'm not going to sit here and tick off blah, 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 blah. But, one of the reasons that I've remained such a devoted and diehard fan of Malloy is that Malloy has been Malloy since the first time I ever heard him on the radio.
Right.
You know, there's been no sea change. There's been no
deal, Bob.
Yes.
Real deal.
I mean, I finally had the opportunity to find that out.
Where could Marcy Winograd, who ran against Jane Harman, possibly get a forum to talk about her campaign? Who had her on?
There you go.
Mike Malloy had her on. Could she get on the Tom Hartman show? No. No, because I know her people tried. Tom Hartman would not allow her on the show. Why? I didn't hear her on Ed Schultz. I didn't hear her on Randy Rhodes. But Mike Malloy, yes. Marcy Winograd went on one of the most heinous Democrats on the face of this planet, who shouldn't even call themselves a Democrat, of Jane Harman, who is a traitor to this country and could care less about the average American. She's a millionaire. Her husband's like almost a billionaire. And here she is, supposedly a Democrat, and her allegiance has always been to Israel and never to the United States. That's why she was caught up in this AIPAC scandal. But you talk about for a big business Democrat, too, who owned, I don't know how many shares of Goldman Sachs. She was like something like in the millions of dollars worth of shares of Goldman Sachs she owned. It was ridiculous. You know, what a conflict of interest for a congressperson to have that many shares of a company that she's supposed to be regulating, for God's sakes. I mean, this is insane. This is, you know, millionaires in Congress, anyway. It always bugged the heck out of me that no liberal talk show except Mike Malloy would give Marcy Winograd the time of day to go after Jane Harman. That's my rant.
Well placed.
I mean, that to me told who were the real people for the working class and the real progressives, and Mike Malloy stood out because nobody else would come to her aid. And one other thing, you know, see Obama's trying to get rid of the GSE. We were talking about the GSEs that one time. You know, he's got Geithner out there, you know, putting up that trial balloon of getting rid of Fannie and Freddie completely. Yeah, let's just chop off the middle class and break out the whole New Deal mandate where it should have been. And I sent you an email, and I, you know, for Sandra's consumption, that all you have to do is let's just reduce the mandate of the GSEs of Fannie and Freddie to be 15 and 30 year mortgages. None of this exotic stuff, just fixed rate mortgages to middle class people that qualify. You don't have the mortgage insurance involved. They have to put 20% down. There are no jumbos. These are conventional mortgages. Just keep the mandate for the middle class, not for the rich people, not for the McMansion homes, none of the ARMs, none of the subprimes, none of the jumbos, none of the other exotic, you know, arm stuff that Wall Street wants. Just keep it clean, fixed, 15 and 30 year for the middle class. That's it. But no, he wants to blow up the whole thing. And you know what he wants to do too, as reading? Well, he wants to do a debate just like he did with the health care debate. We're going to hash this around in Congress for a while. Just let's see what falls out. You know what'll fall out.
That doesn't take a crystal ball, Andy.
Yeah, let's do it for the benefit of Wall Street, my buddies, who are going to fund my 2012 campaign. We'll do what they want.
Which comes back to my getting stronger by the day conviction, Andy, that the 2012 presidential election is a boat race. I'm as convinced as I can be. The Republicans don't want it. They're getting a lot of what they want from Barack Obama. They're giving him cover by, you know, talking crazy crap like Republicans do. But
yeah, they're the foil for him. You know, Obama just have to say, well, what are you going to do? Vote for a Republican? Look what they're going to do. They're 10 times worse, which they are. But you're not
right, and again, that's that.
You're moving us back too.
Right, that's that politics of cynicism that drives me crazy. I mean, because I know what I'm going to do in the voting booth in November 2012. I know it. And
I know what I'm going to do, and I don't think it's going to be the same thing you're going to do.
No, I have a feeling it won't be.
No, it won't be. And
but I
other people in my family that are going along with me too. So that's 7 or 8 votes he's lost.
Yeah.
Don, goodbye. No, I'm in the Mike Malloy camp on this one too. Let's burn it down. Burn it down.
You know, I understand the sentiment behind that, Andy. But I don't feel like I'm entitled to say that for other people who will be the ones in the fire.
Yeah. I think we're going to be in the fire anyway. That's my feeling.
Well, I think you're probably right.
He's not bringing us forward. He's moving us backwards. And it's no good.
The argument about debt has won the day. The argument about the deficit has won the day.
It's because of the tax cuts. It's all because of the tax. We've had a revenue problem. You always have a revenue problem when the economy goes in the toilet and the whole country is mismanaged with outsourcing and
you remind me of something, Andy.
Monopolies.
Don't you find it interesting that finally there is some pushback being directed toward Grover Norquist, this guy who has been the author of so much evil that has happened to this country with his taxes are evil? He's finally getting some pushback, but of course it's not coming from Democrats. It's not coming from liberals. It's coming from right-wing Republicans who are further right than he is. He was attacked verbally at the CPAC convention this past week by people like Pam Geller and Frank Luntz, you know, talking about how he is the problem because he has been co-opted by the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood is controlling CPAC now. I mean, just crazier than a sprayed roach. But they're the only ones with the structure, or maybe even the nerve to push back against him. And lo and behold, there it was. There was the for-profit media reporting on it today.
Well, you know, I hear on the talk show circuit quite a bit talking up that we have a revenue problem and that taxes should be back in the discussion is David Stockman, the old Reagan
right.
Economic advisor, and he has been out there for months now indicating that we have a revenue shortfall. You always have a revenue shortfall when you have the economy. When the GDP stops growing, you don't have the money. When you have high unemployment, you don't have the tax base coming in. You don't have the revenues coming in when the profits are low. But now the corporate profits are high. Things should start to turn around. If people get jobs, things should start to turn around. But David Stockman has been saying that, which is nice to hear. And of course, Reagan's legacy is he did raise taxes like 6 out of the 8 years
he
was in office. He was and he destroyed the middle class. I truly believe he destroyed the middle class because he was the guy who switched the tax burden from the upper class to the middle to lower middle class. He changed that tax burden by doubling down on the payroll taxes from 6% to 12% and lowering the top tax.
Well, I remember that.
To 28.
I remember that agreement with the revamping of the tax code in what, 1986?
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a total screw over of the middle class. You know,
right. That changed everything.
Your credit card interest deduction, goodbye. Your car loan interest deduction, goodbye. Nothing was left except your mortgage interest. And for many people, the mortgage interest was not enough to justify them filing itemized. So, boom.
On the chopping block now, too. They
sure
that out there.
Sure it is.
The pigs at the Cat Food Commission want to get rid of the mortgage interest. God, what are you... You know, I could see cutting that back a bit, like saying you can only have mortgage interest on the home you live in, not on the 10, like a John McCain, not on the 12 other homes that you also live in, but only one. And you can't do it on your vacation home. I mean, maybe you can do things like that to clamp down and tighten up the rules on that. But God, to a middle class person, their home is everything.
But the other thing that permeates all of this, Andy, is this this thing that has gotten traction inside the for-profit media, namely that we can talk about American insolvency. Insolvency is a term that we use for individual households, individual country companies, but it doesn't apply on a national level.
No, not at all. I can't stand to hear Boehner, and I must have heard that a dozen times, and I don't even have a TV or listen to TV, but I heard it. We're broke! We're broke! We got to, that's Boehner, right?
Yeah.
We're broke! We're broke? Are you kidding me? Corporate profits are at a record. How can you say we're broke? How can you say we're broke? We have more, we're the richest country in the world. How are we broke? We got more billionaires and millionaires than any other country. And how can we be broke? No, we have a distribution problem. The distribution has been going to the top since the 1970s. That's our problem. And the rich have been keeping more, and the corporations keeping much more than they've given back to the community.
If you want to hear something fascinating, Andy, drill back about 3 days over at Crooks and Liars. Our buddy Dave Nywert did a beautiful mashup between Dr. Strangelove and this video lecture by, do you remember General Jerry Boykin?
Yeah.
He's the one who was going around to civic groups and
the
stuff and saying,
God-fearing guy.
Yeah, God-fearing guy said, you know, we beat them in Somalia because our God was bigger than their God, and their God was the devil. Well, this guy's got a video lecture series out warning America, and he's already shown up on Radio Rwanda on the Beckerhead program. And if you just, this stuff is valuable, even in the context, the economic context that we're talking about, this stuff is valuable for liberals and progressives to see so that they can, because we think, oh, look, we're tweeting, we've got Facebook, oh, they are so far out ahead of us, ahead of the curve, we think we're on straight road. And there's all kinds of Emerys and Eileens and Clydes and Arleys out there watching this stuff going, yeah, by God, that income redistribution. Because he says things like, one of the key tenets of Marxism is wealth redistribution, and it's happening in America today.
It sure is. It's going to the top.
Right, but he's telling them, no, they're trying to take away your guns and your savings, and they want to give them to those people, whoever those people happen to be. I highly recommend people to go and look at this post, this video by Dave Nywert over at Crooks and Liars, because it is so educational, it is so informative as to the workings of the right wing mind and what a right winger wants to hear. This isn't being offered to right wingers because they need to hear it. It is a reflection of what they desire to hear. A right winger always has to be told that it's somebody else's fault. The brown guy in the White House is a suitable target. I hate that word. A suitable focus. But it's all part of a dumb show. It's all part of a dumb show. I saw this CPAC stuff. Ron Paul comes out at the head of the straw poll, please. But the rest of the straw poll is just lunacy. It's Willard Romney and Tim Pawlenty and Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich each got 2%. Haley Barbour got 1%. And there's not a name in there that is presidential material. Not one. If they wanted it, they would have a presidential name out there. There isn't one.
Yeah, well, we're waiting for Jeb, as you said. You know, too, Boykin was the guy that was in charge in the Carter administration when they went to rescue the hostages, and they had that snafu in the desert where the sand got in the helicopter.
That was Boykin?
That was Boykin. He was in charge
Suits.
Of that whole thing. Isn't that wonderful?
Fits.
I wonder, did he really want that to work?
Me too. I did not know that. I got to read some more
him.
On that. Andy,
that
so good to hear from you, my friend. You have yourself a good evening. I got to roll along and wrap things up here, but damn fine conversation.
Yeah, Bob. Thanks for giving me so much time.
Oh, no worries. No worries.
Have a good one, huh?
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Andy calling from California. Email rolled in a little bit ago from our buddy Robert in Japan when I mentioned to my friend of Japanese ancestry going, you know, home to find her roots. Robert said the comment about the Japanese CNN staff who returned to Japan to get back to her roots. Yes, the Japanese are probably more problematic or bothered by speaking Japanese to someone who looks Japanese, but shock is not really of the tribe. So it was probably not a good idea necessarily. But you know, Bob, I felt the same exact way you do about the brown people serving the white when I went to San Francisco, California, where a lot of Mexican-Americans were serving us at hotels. I experienced the same thing on a cruise to the Bahamas 25-odd years ago. Nothing's changed. Even on my recent trip to Palawan, the Philippines, the last rainforest island in Asia that is largely untouched, the hours of the hotel staff were pretty bad, 16-hour days. And they were probably the lucky ones, too, as there was not a whole lot of industry or activity on the island. So I was torn, enjoying myself, but knowing that my joy was based on the misery of others. Sheesh. But we'll talk soon, says Robert. Take care. You had a good time, and for that I'm very happy. Cheers from Japan. We did. We had a wonderful time. And if there's any matter in this, we tipped well. We weren't even supposed to tip. We still tipped. Because among other things, I heard people being rude and nasty and hateful to the staff, and it just made me want to hide my head. And a couple of times I looked and I said, "We're not all like that, please." Because Americans can get real ugly. That boat over there with those flags, those are homosexuals. That's a whole boatload of those homosexuals. And you wondered why I wanted to stay on Grand Turk. Yeah. Oh, let's see. You still here? No, you're not. Okay. So that takes us very close to the end of the program tonight. It's about 12 and a half minutes before time to head out. Rick Smith is on his way tonight. Don't forget about Rick Smith. 9 p.m. to midnight follows the program here. And if you can't catch Rick live, and I understand a lot of you can't, because a lot of you do what I often do, and that is go over to Malloy. If you can't catch Rick Smith live, catch him on the podcast. He's set up for podcasting over at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find him at iTunes as well, The Rick Smith Show. And just give him a try, because Rick truly is one of America's best. He's one of the best liberal and you know, the real kind. We were talking a little bit ago about born-again liberals. There ain't nothing born-again about Rick Smith. Rick is straight up and 100%. Another reminder, just as we go toward the close of the program tonight, another reminder, we will not be live at 6 p.m., the usual broadcast time tomorrow evening, because we will be bringing you live another PRISM West Virginia Origins of the United States History Chat. You'll get it on the stream just like normal, just like regular. And it will also be available at Ustream, ustream.tv. Head on with Bob Kincaid. Just search it. I went looking on our website, and it used to be there just in a box on the main website page. I don't know if it is or not. I didn't see it today. But at any rate, you can get a video, you can get an audio any way you want. That'll be cool. As you heard Clayton talking about it, it is incredibly informative. It is source-based history. And it is hosted by a dear friend of mine, Dr. Bill O'Brien. Once you've heard Dr. Bill, you will want to hear more and more and more. Dr. Bill is one of the I hated it when Dr. Bill had to go back to doing his day job all day long and couldn't do the show anymore, because he did some magnificent work for quite a period of time early on in the Horn's existence. He is an absolute joy to listen to and a conversationalist par excellence. So that starts at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll be 4 p.m. Pacific Time tomorrow evening. Join in. It's an opportunity to get yourself up to speed on some elements of American history that, if it was handled by the teabaggers, would probably, well, it wouldn't be anything you'd even resemble. But this is the real deal, and education about and knowledge about this era is important to liberals and progressives, simply because the right wing is so fond of rewriting it. So 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I will not be live at 6 p.m. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will have the PRISM West Virginia series for you. There will be a number of these as we go through the spring. And then what Clayton was talking about, we will have another. It's like 2 weeks long in the summer, and you will you'll just love that. It's amazing. So there's that. The other thing is to remind you, and one contribution did come in during the program. We are in a spot. We're always in a spot, but sometimes less so than others. We should be at $1,200 tonight for our monthly fundraising, because what it takes to keep this going is not chicken feed, but we're not raising money for anybody's salary. We're raising money to meet expenses. And that's the nature, that's the nature of how we do things here. So if you can hit the PayPal button with whatever you can share, it will be greatly appreciated. We started the evening at $570 for the month. We are now at $870 thanks to one kind and generous contributor who stepped into the breach for 30 people. 30 people, 30 $10 contributions. So we, well, if we were to finish on, see what happens when I do math on the fly. We need 25, 35. We need we need about 30 people. 35 people to step up and $10 a piece between now and sometime tomorrow. And that'll get us to halfway. That'll get us over the hump. It really is important that we get to the point where we can not go into the red, because, you know, there's constantly, you don't just do stuff and then it stays good forever. We never know when a computer's going to drop dead. And there are other expenses associated just on a monthly basis. This goes out by virtue of bandwidth. There's a lot of cost associated with the toll-free telephone number. And that's the only way we're going to make this go. Because, well, corporate America doesn't have much interest in advertising with us, because we don't advance a corporate agenda. We advance an agenda that is people-based. You-based, liberal-based, progressive-based. And as I mentioned, Bossman Wayne has been rather badly ill. He is getting better. I've talked to him frequently, but he's getting over a stroke. And I hope you will send your good thoughts, your best wishes his way, and it will make him happy to know that people are thinking of him. He'll be getting better. But you know what? Your good wishes and your good thoughts, well, they never hurt, do they? No. So it's been great being back in the chair this evening. The vacation was wonderful. And as the week progresses, there will be more to talk about. Things seen, things observed, things considered. Somewhere tonight out on, it's Monday. Somewhere out there in the Caribbean, the MS Eurodam is making from Grand Turk for Puerto Rico and a landing sometime around 1 o'clock tomorrow. And there are scores of people working for relatively low pay, working decidedly long and difficult hours, who are calling people Mr. Bob, Mr. Fred, Miss Susan, Miss Audrey, and smiling all the while, pulling 12-hour days, 7 days a week, 10 months out of the year. And they're doing an amazing job. And we don't stop to consider very often the people who make our lives so much better. But I'll be thinking of them, and Agnes will be thinking of them, fondly and frequently. Indeed. Because they helped make one of the most special times we have ever had even more so. And while they may not remember us, we will remember them. And our lives are changed and made manifestly better, have been, by them. So thanks, everybody. Have a great evening. We'll be back tomorrow night with the Prism West Virginia series, and then on Wednesday with a regular program. Thanks go out to everybody who makes all of this go. Our chat room moderator, Lottie. Our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, who checked in periodically with me when I had to sell an internet service to make sure that I hadn't fallen overboard or anything. Thanks, Betsy. Thanks go out to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. And, of course, to John Fox and Ben Birch. John Fox, our chief engineer, and more than capable fill-in host during my absence. Thanks again, John. And looking forward to getting you back behind the mic on a much more regular basis. You need to be. And to Ben Birch, who, since 2002, has done what no one else has done, and that is to literally save liberal radio on the Internet. WhiteRoseSociety.org has done things, gone places where others feared to tread and made it possible for liberal radio to exist when others stumbled and fell. I don't know if it can ever be properly expressed, the hard work that Ben Birch has done and does do. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, and a special shout out to all our heroic friends with Kentucky Rising, as they persist in their demands for humane and just and fair treatment for Appalachian Mountain communities in eastern Kentucky. We are with you in spirit. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.